This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the dregs of humanity.
Episode 203, Submission 153, American Gladiators Knockoffs.
Funny thing happened in 1988 when Johnny Ferraro and Dan Carr decided to put Ordinary Joes against bodybuilders, fitness models, and former professional footballers looking for one final glimpse of glory. It became a hit. Crazy, right?
I know. And it became a long-running hit for like almost 10 years in syndication.
Well, actually, I did the math. It was more like 7 years.
Oh.
But we got another 2 years out of it on NBC primetime. And it adheres to this day to the point, and this just speaks to accidental scheduling.
Oh, yeah. But we scheduled this like in an open spot, but it turned out last week they announced that WWE and MGM are working on a revival of American Gladiators.
Yep. So a bit of an accidental circumstance, but nevertheless, a show as endeared as American Gladiators just doesn't go away. In fact, if anything, it gets copied. And in the late 80s and early 90s, mostly the early 90s, it got copied a lot. Now, some of the copies were actually good. Some of them looked good, Greg.
They looked good.
They looked really good.
Looked good.
Looks good.
Looks good.
Looks good.
Oh, it 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 looks good.
Looks good.
One looked good.
A one looked good, but there's a reason why it looked good.
Yes. Because it was the first out of the gate by,
like two or three years.
Three or four years. Well, you know what? We'll talk about that later on. But right now, let's get to all the shows that, that came out of the gate trying to make, bit of that American Gladiators money. And the first one happened in 1992. Imagine, if you will, you take the American Gladiators formula and you mix it up with A Night at Medieval Times. What do you get? You get Knights and Warriors, which ran from September 19th, 1992 to September 11th, 1993. For an unknown number of episodes.
Safe to say it's somewhere around the range of 13 to 26.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they ran 26 and then reran the same 26 for the second half of the season. It doesn't make sense to rerun 13 episodes four times.
Yeah, makes sense.
You got the set built, you know, the 13 episodes just seems kind of low and not very cost effective.
Right, right. So what Knights and Warriors was, or what they did with the American Gladiators, and actually, you know what? Just play the open.
All right, let me play it. Hold on.
It is written in the book of good and evil that in a time long ago, all was peace and harmony, paradise on earth. Then one fateful day, the universe shifted. All was dark, and for those born on that day, their evil destiny would be sealed.
Oh, no.
Now they have united to wreak havoc on an unsuspecting world, and forevermore would be known as Warriors!
Come out to play!
Led by the walking, talking tower of destruction, Plague!
Plague!
A true physical specimen, an iron beauty.
He's steel maiden.
To handle, he's Pyro.
Pyro!
The biggest chip off the rock of Gibraltar, Lady Battle.
That's scary.
The Duke of Doom, he's your worst nightmare. The Royal Good Girl, gone bad. Princess Malice. The utter state of confusion is chaos. And a truly dangerous snake in the grass, Venom.
Wait a minute, Chico. That's not Tom Hardy.
You don't look like Eddie Brock to me. That's the next, Spider-Verse, by the way.
Do you really want me to put Yaya spoiler alert on this part? I don't know if Chico's seen Let There Be Carnage yet.
I have not seen it yet.
Alright, so we'll wait till he actually sees it before we ruin it for Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Alright.
The Despicable Warriors, representing the gold team from Boynton Beach, Florida, the stunt double and actress Diana Cuevas, and her teammates Michael West, an aircraft mechanic from Lake Village, California,
we're waving, we're smiling and waving.
The gold team from Baltimore, Maryland, security investigator Robert Pavel, and his teammates...
They're wearing ties and suits right now. It's time to get them into some armor.
Chances of winning are slim.
Oh.
These teams shall vie for knighthood in a whirling battle where but one couple shall reap the riches of sweet victory. Ooh. There is no turning back. The time has come for knights and warriors.
You're looking at the Warrior Dome, home field and battleground for our next preliminary round one competition of knights and warriors. Well, hi again, everybody. I'm Joe Fowler. Thank you.
Yeah!
Okay, Greg, you're going to have to explain to me who the hell Joe Fowler is.
Oh, give me one sec. Give me one second. I got to get the, I didn't expect I was going to get the Wikipedia page for Joe Fowler up, but okay.
Does Wikipedia even have a Joe Fowler page?
No, he has to. There's a disambiguation for Joe Fowler. Oh, no, he doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
I told you he doesn't have, a Wikipedia page.
That is bullcrap, Joe Fowler.
We're going to have to go one step up in the legitimacy hierarchy to IMDb.
Good.
And he does have an IMDb page. I have it up. I'm surprised Joe Fowler doesn't have a wiki. Oh, my gosh.
Joe Fowler was a sports reporter. I know that because we talked about. Well, I talked about him because he was in the Washington Redskins' 12th Man music video at the very end, which I inserted at the end of the episode because we didn't really talk about it, but I inserted it into editing about that. So because I discovered it afterwards.
Bit of background info: he worked as the sports anchor for WCAU in Philadelphia. And KSAT-12 in San Antonio, right before he was called on to take over the WWF Control Center around 1995 after Lord Alfred Hayes retired.
Well, no, that's wrong because it was 1993 because he replaced Mean Gene Okerlund after he left for WCW.
Ah.
So whoever wrote this got their information wrong.
So, aside from being a former sports anchor, an infomercial pitch man, and the guy from that thing we talked about earlier, or at least this time last year, he did this.
And this isn't even going to be the last time we mention Joe Fowler this show.
That is correct. More on that later.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin that. Okay. Oh, by the way, guys... He was on an episode of Doogie Howser MD in 1982 as reporter. And guys, would you believe he was in D2, the Mighty Ducks?
Yeah, you know what he played?
What did he play, Chico?
He played a reporter.
No. He played a reporter at Anaheim.
So not just any reporter. A reporter in Anaheim.
A reporter at Anaheim. I'm guessing this was near the end of the movie when they were playing Iceland at the pond.
And again, he was also in the epic feature Independence Day.
Oh, what did he play in
He played a reporter!
Oh! Man! What a stretch! In three different movies! Well, two movies and a TV show, he played reporter.
Yep, and when he was playing a reporter, he played an announcer on at least two episodes of Coach.
And he played an announcer on an episode of Ah, Real Monsters!
Well, good on him.
Alright, so let's hear what Joe has to say about what's going on this exciting show. You ready, Mike?
Bring it on.
Very much for joining us. As always, I'll be calling the action throughout today's telecast as we take you back to the games of King Arthur's court.
Oh.
And you would be so very proud of these games.
How? Hold on. How would Joe Fowler know that King Arthur would be very proud about the games that they'd be playing on this show?
They're authentic? I don't know.
How do we know they're authentic, Mike?
Don't ask me these difficult questions.
It is television's newest, most exciting sports spectacular. And joining me wherever the action takes place throughout this Warrior Dome is Lisa Canning.
Here I am, Joe. Today's competition is as exciting as the battles we've seen in the past few weeks. Michael, Diana, Robert, and Marsha have a real, real battle on their hands, though, so they better keep on their toes.
Lots of energy.
Hey,
right
it's the lady
now.
Who hosted exactly one season of Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
I think
that.
Our knights are ready. They are up for the challenge. They're anxious to face
the Oh, the knights are ready.
You ready? You?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go. The action begins
oh, good.
Our version of that medieval military machine.
I think Joe's a little bit too excited
Joe,
about
catapult
the catapult
is a 20th century
Oh, who wouldn't be?
Power, launching red balls the length of the Warrior Dome to the
Okay, now Greg, there's a catapult here. They definitely had those in the times of King Arthur.
Okay, yeah, so he would be proud about this.
The knights must brave the 60-mile-per-hour slingshot. And
they also have to bring
a
fire
toward the castle.
I don't think they had rubber balls back in the day of King Arthur, but yeah,
no.
For each successful throw. Playing time for this event is 1 minute.
1 minute.
And here comes the Warriors. You know they're trouble.
Look at that. The audience boo.
The louder the boos, the happier the Warriors. So could I just tell you something? We're going to talk about a lot of things on this episode. But one of the things that we're going to talk about is narrative versus lack of narrative.
Yeah.
Because if you remember American Gladiators, the American Gladiators did not have a narrative. They were just the house band.
What is Pyro? Oh!
Pyro makes fire.
Look at the crowd. They're like, yay, he made fire!
That is your... Yeah, Pyro made freaking fire.
Is Pyro supposed to be a mutant, Chico?
Probably.
From Westlake Village, California.
I know it was a mutant when the movie came out.
I see what you did there.
Oh, I do want to make one comment about the open of the show.
Okay.
Did you notice when the contenders, if you will, entered? They were in their civvies.
Yeah.
How awkward did that look? Did you ever see anybody on American Gladiators or anywhere else wearing their street clothes as they entered, especially in a thematic universe like this?
No!
No! That looked just weird.
It was totally out of context for this.
And then
they have their suits there.
Oh, they look like they're straight out of The Running Man.
Yeah.
And the first knight to grab a red ball is Michael West. He'll go from the 10 zone and shoot high.
Oh, I like this. This is kind of like dodgeball.
They're both fighting for it. Robert Pavel went for it, dropped it, and will not try any longer. Now Pavel has it in the 10. The 5 shoots high. 42 seconds to go. Michael
you
West.
Ever, has anyone ever wondered what would happen if the rubber met the fire?
I don't know. All the way. Although I just watched that episode of Dark Side of the Ring on Onita's FMW. Fire and rubber don't mix.
It's a good piece of dodge, and there's a shot by Pavel. It's good. We are on the boards. 10-0, Pavel. Michael West has to grab something. Pavel has another one. He ducks and shoots. It looked like
They have to throw it over the ring of into the ring of fire.
That's a throw it into the ring of fire. Yes.
The goal team shoots. Pavel,
thou shalt not pass. You shall not pass.
It's too late. Pavel leads it 20-0. We got a couple highlights for you. Now take a look at this. Robert using the patented duck.
Whoa!
Shock method. I don't know if this is strategy or survival, but
it works. What?
Here's Lisa with the guys.
Some nice moves there, Michael, but you didn't score. What was the problem for you?
Knights and Warriors is basically American Gladiators if it was held at a Renaissance fair.
Or medieval times.
I just complete with everybody in K-Babe except for the host coming at me. And the contenders.
But those, I the triple my crowd is dressed in civvy clothes.
This is the second heat of catapult. Our
female what heck? I guess they're in
medieval times.
They will now go ahead. Diana but is a 28-year-old actress.
Yeah, that's basically what I was about to say. Because there's a narrative and there's a lack of narrative.
She's originally from Argentina, now living in Hollywood. A fitness instructor, 26 years old. 5'8", 130. Battle Axe and Venom are now manning the slingshot. Their goal is to prevent the Knights from zeroing in on the ring of fire.
Because, narrative, everybody, the house band, let's call them.
They look ready.
The Warriors.
There's the
they are in kayfabe, like,
in purple.
As long as the cameras
shot.
Are on.
It's a little bit I'll tell you what, she was close to the target. Both of them struggling to get one. Gravis has it.
But you look at the American Gladiators, they're just the house team.
You gotta keep your eye on Battle Axe. She can fire
like
seven babies.
They have characters, but they do not have narrative.
You gotta run,
that's
catch,
what I was
throw,
trying
dodge,
to say.
Push, shove your way through this event. A shot is wide. That one taken by Lanza. A shot by Gravis is missed. You know why? Because Battle Axe was bearing down at the slingshot.
Oh.
The intensity in the Warriors' faces as they prepare to shoot their victims. A red ball is caught, dropped out, picked.
Does that make any sense, guys? Characters, the American Gladiators were characters, but did not have a narrative. And yet, these are characters and narrative.
It looked like it almost hit a Warrior. She'll pay.
Yeah, I guess.
Another shot low.
There wasn't a kayfabe element to American Gladiators, yeah. It was just, they're gladiators. And they're fighting these people because...
Take a look at your replay.
It was a simple show, American Gladiators. It didn't have, like, this narrative, storyline. Like, the American Gladiators are, like, modernized versions of Gladiators. They didn't do that crap.
And you certainly did, but you just didn't do it.
There were American Gladiators.
I mean, from outside it looks very easy, but when
it was a simpler show.
Diane?
For
yeah,
a simpler time.
Were a real intimidating factor.
But wait, they did really have characters, if you think about it. I'm thinking specifically Malibu in, like, the first season or two.
Hey, Malibu, after you got drilled by that human cannonball, I thought, hey, there is no way this guy is going to live to play another day. You're alive. You're well. What happened? Did you go to the hospital? Did you get x-rays?
Well, dude, it's like this. I saw this guy coming, and I took the most excellent hit of my life. The next thing I knew, I was on the beach taking in some cosmic rays, getting healed by Mother Nature, taking a little brewski, holding on a beautiful babe, and I'm fine today.
So no hospital, no doctors, just Mother Nature, huh?
Oh, I'm a child of Mother Nature. What do you expect?
Malibu, you are truly amazing. He took a licking, and he is still ticking.
Sweet.
Ladies, that's why they came up with nothing. Here is your...
Wait, what did Joe just say? Hold on.
Fire close. It was just really hard to see it.
Lisa, I counted 27 gold bullets fired at those ladies. That's why they came up with nothing. Here.
Good
night, everybody.
Joe.
Lanza and Pavel lead 20-0 over the gold team.
Okay, let me try to find it.
The blister is with the position you see before you. Now, don't you go away, fans.
For coming up, the sorcerer's wheel will spin us off into the warrior's stratosphere. But first, it will be the clash of epic proportions in battle form when we return.
Does this remind you of anything?
Not at all. Not at all. Oh, hold up, guys. Hold up. When that guy was talking, you know what? It reminded me of. It reminded me of that Mega 64 sketch for Resident Evil, made fun of the guy in the game going,
What are you buying? Got a lot of good things on sale, stranger.
Greetings, stranger.
What are you buying?
Thank you.
Got a lot of good things on sale, stranger.
Got a lot of good things on sale, stranger.
Got a lot of good things on sale, stranger.
What do you got?
Things. Welcome.
Hi.
What are you selling?
Nothing over here. Are you picking up a pizza?
Ah, yes. I'll buy it at a high price.
What's the name?
Stranger.
Oh my gosh.
Fine.
Well, okay, but before we get back in there, one thing I want to add is we heard that one of the warriors in this game was Lady Battleaxe. And Lady Battleaxe went on to much bigger things. Might remember her from Glee.
I do
talking about one Dot
Glee.
Marie Jones.
Oh.
Yep.
She was the gym teacher who actually was like into physical fitness and stuff like that. Cause she was, like a 15-time arm wrestling champion.
Ooh. Yeah.
Arm wrestling champion. She, yeah. Big girl. Since obviously we need to do a mention of this like on every episode, she was on like 5 episodes of Married with Children.
Take her down, Archimedes!
Take him down, Dot.
Damn. You a lot of woman.
I'm a lot of everything.
All right, let's continue. What does Joe have to say about this next game right here?
Finds quickness, balance, and keen reflexes. It's called the Sorcerer's Wheel.
A revolving turntable measuring 25 feet in diameter. The wheel will spin in one direction.
Oh.
The knights try to outrun the wheel in the opposite direction, passing the red arrow lap counter. Now, that's not tough enough. We've placed 2 obstacles along the way. 2 2-foot hurdles that the knight must jump while trying to stay on both feet. This is a 45-second event. Each time the knight passes the lap counter on the outside of the wheel, 10 points will be earned. If both feet touch the inside circle, the lap does not count.
But that's not all.
Hey, Battleaxe! While the wheel's spinning, I'll skin him!
Oh, not the Malice Mace!
Oh, yeah, the Malice Mace! It's hard!
It's heavy!
Okay, here we go. This is an individual event with just the ladies competing, but the points that they earn will be added to their team scores. Diana Cuevas is going to need a lot of speed. She's going to have to get away from Battleaxe, Steel Maiden, Princess Malice, and Venom. They have control of the mace. Sorcerer's Wheel is about to begin.
Dude.
45 seconds on the clock.
Ba-ba-ba.
Score 10 points. A lap counts when you pass that big red arrow. Look at Battleaxe holding the mace. She's going to wait and hit Cuevas head on. What a tactic. And she might have waited too long. She might know she...
Oh!
I underestimate the power of Battleaxe. She was head on perfect. Right in the rear.
Got him. Got him in the butt.
You know where it was? She got her in the butt, Bob.
That joke was so old, you should give it away on eBay Price is Right.
Definitely as hard as they look.
No, don't play the music there. Don't.
You better believe it. Good for you, Diana. Let's see how Martha does against the Warriors, Joe.
Actually, it's 4-1, but I can't blame Diana for being a little confused at this point. Now, will Martha learn from Diana? Martha Reyenza is next on the wheel. There's the trumpets. She's holding off. Can you blame her? There goes Battleaxe again. Just going to fling the mace across. Oh, I see. They're toying with her. 37 seconds and counting. You may look at him toy with her.
You think King Arthur would be proud of this game, Mike?
She touched the infield so she doesn't get credit for that lap. You can't put both feet on that infield mat. You got to stay on the outside of the dish. Martha Leanta, she's a former...
I don't know how to respond to that.
She's a mace with a mace.
She's got 10 points.
Oh, she can do it.
Dares her to cross. Come on, Martha, you got to get across.
Come on.
Trying to get a lap.
Oh! But she got 10 points.
Battle Axe DGAF. You know Martha
sees the giant. At least she got one rotation in there, one lap.
Yeah, that's true.
Get me back to Argentina. Battle Axe says, hey, I got your ride to Argentina. Well, you know what we're talking about when we say good versus evil. You're seeing
I got your ride to Argentina.
Martha picked up 10 points. Those are very bad because it...
Oh, my God. Oh, cripes. So, Chico, you got a list of all the events that are on this show?
I do have a list of all the events on this show. We just saw the first two. That would be Catapult, where they are trying to dodge yellow balls while trying to catch red balls and throwing them into the Ring of Fire like some Lord of the Rings nightmare. Then you have the Sorcerer's Wheel, where our players are trying to run around on a spinning platform while dodging the giant mace of death.
And jumping the hurdles. It's the event that we just listened to. Yeah.
And then you have Battle Swords, where the knight and the warrior are running across treadmills on an elevated platform, trying to knock each other down with foam bats. Yes, it's the joust on a treadmill.
Yeah, I was going to use your line. Does this remind you of anything?
Go ahead, use it.
Does this remind you of anything?
And then you have a volcano, where you have to climb up a 30-foot volcano-shaped net. And inside the net are four warriors. One is strapped to a harness. The other three are controlled by the height and angle. The hardest warrior has pads to knock the knight down, trying to prevent them from scoring. So it's basically the knights and warriors version of the wall, only in a net. Roller Joust. Each knight has 45 seconds to skate around the jousting arena, trying to dodge two warriors who try to bring the knight down. The knight carried a foam lance, which was used to capture rings on poles scattered around the arena. Red rings are worth 10 points, while the gold rings are worth 25. For the first 15 seconds, the knights could take one of the paths forming an X inside the arena to escape the warriors. Once inside the X, the warriors couldn't enter or interfere. After 15 seconds, the warrior free zone was lifted, and play would resume as normal.
Hey, Greg?
What?
How would King Arthur react to rollerblades being a thing back in medieval days?
He'd be like, wow, this is amazing. You're on these roller skates? Well, hold on a second. Didn't Thomas Ian Nichols from Rookie of the Year go to his court in that movie, Chico? Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Maybe he introduced him to rollerblades and he was like,
we're getting ahead of ourselves, guys. Alright, then you have the tug of warriors. The knight and the warrior stood on rotating platforms while each of them pulled on a rope. The knight had 30 seconds to pull the warrior off their platform. If the knight won, he or she earned 100. If 30 seconds expired or both went over, 50 points were awarded for a draw. The pit. The knights were pitted against each other in a bowl-like arena. The warriors outside the bowl would rocket back and forth with the knights inside it. The object in the game was for one knight to pin the other using a pad. Depending on where the pin was, the bowl had four scoring sections. Two 25-point sections, 150 and 175. This was basically Breakthrough and Conquer at a Soup Bowl without the Breakthrough.
Now, Breakthrough and Conquer was the best game on American Gladiators. I love that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And the final event, Greg, you want to bring the episode back up?
Okay. Is it the final event at the end, Chico?
Yes. This is the end game right here.
Okay, hold on. Let me try to get it.
It feels like one of those games that was focus group tested. It's like, which of these two words do you like the best?
All right, let me play it right here.
The final event,
Target Onslaught. It's played in two parts. The entire Warrior Dome is converted into a huge shooting gallery. In the first part, one teammate has 30 seconds to hit six floor targets. And the weapon of choice? This specially designed power crossbow. The archer will be trying to earn time rather than points. Starting with a minimum 30 seconds in the bank, each hit is worth an extra 5 seconds. One hit pushes the total to 35, two hits to 40 seconds, and so on. That total is then passed on to the shooter's teammate for the second half.
In the second part, the other teammate must hit the high-flying, onslaughting warriors as they zigzag their way toward the shooter. A warrior hit on the first slide is worth 150 points, second 100 points, and the last closest slide is worth 50 points.
The purple team of Marta Leanza and Jeff Jockum will go first. They are leading by only 50 points. Marta has elected to shoot first for her team. The Knights are ready. And the first active target is the moon. She shoots low, but she's online. Just had to raise it up a little bit. Yes, nice shot. 23 to go. She gets an early target. Now she is going for a horse. One of the horses reloads and fires. She was close, just to the left. 16 seconds and counting. Just low. Another one, and she might have it. 11 seconds. She has 5 extra seconds for her teammate already. She is shooting for the sun. The horse. Yes, she got the horse. That's 10 seconds.
She got the horse.
3 seconds to go. And she gets the dragon. But the Leanza hits 3 targets. And she, with those 3 targets hit, will pass on 15 extra seconds to her partner, Jeff. He will step up to the power
crossbow. All right, 15.
Get ready to take on the warrior.
Look at him, like, you're wanting of this.
Hit as many as he can. Here we go. And remember, Jockum is...
I should have gone ziplining.
38 seconds of counting, quickly reload. He misses Nightmare. Back to the deep end zone of the Warrior Dome. He can't hit play. He's shooting for the middle and missing Battle Axe. 28 seconds and counting. Another shot is about to be fired. He aims and misses. Chaos!
Do you think King Arthur would be proud of zip lines, Mike?
Hit him either. The skate shooter's missing. 16
zip
seconds.
Lines?
Another miss to the left of Venice.
Zip lines!
Him. He is low with Steel Maiden. The Warriors are all over him. Battle Axe moves out of his way. 5 seconds. 4.
Oh, she got it. Got her right in the butt.
1 second to go. And he is able to get a 50 on the front rail. Wow, 50 points, a grand total now of 420.
Okay, so that was a two-tiered version of Assault, essentially.
Yeah, essentially.
Assault the cardboard cutouts, and then Assault the Warriors.
Yes.
Okay. Not terribly derivative.
Derivative.
Unfortunately, guys, only 26 weeks for this show.
But it had such disjointed scoring. Look how they made everything like top heavy in that last round.
Yeah.
You were playing the first round, you're going 5, 10, or 15 points, and 10 points per lap in that wheel game, and now it's 50, 100, 150. Oh, boy, that doesn't sound like a golden snitch.
Yeah.
All right. Chica, what's our next series?
Well, our next series, we have to go to 1994 for our next series. And it is a show that, okay, imagine American Gladiators if it were mixed with Starlight Express.
Starlight Express! 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 Starlight Express!
I'm talking about Blade Warriors.
Blade Warriors? I didn't even realize this was on the itinerary, okay.
Yes, I told you. I found details about this show this morning. I watched an episode of it, and I remember this as the show that it was canceled before it finished out the season.
Okay.
Allegedly because it aired in syndication from October 1st, 1994 to April 1st, 1995, the distributor ran out of money.
Uh-oh.
I knew Susan was going to chime in.
Yeah. And the games itself were very derivative. But the thing of it is, like the American Gladiators, there was no narrative to the house band. But unlike the American Gladiators, they did not have stage names. And one of the events actually teamed up the contenders with the Blade Warriors.
Oh.
All right.
Yep, we had, as the Warriors, Tammy Gantz, Deanna Wilshire, Kim Bowie, Katie Bloomer, Donna Dennis, Chris Mitchell, Eric Wiley, Pat Parnell, Alan Vano, Corey Miller, and Team Captain AJ Action Jackson. And the events were, again, very, very derivative. I mean, imagine, okay, we have rollerblades. We have a giant studio that's actually a hangar. We have a bunch of half pipes. We have a bunch of ramps. What are we going to do with this? Well, here's what they did with this. Okay, our first event was Blade Ball, which had contestants competing in a half pipe against two Blade Warriors. They have to skate to the other side with a Blade Ball and throw it into one of four rows of pods, with the highest pod scoring 8 points. But the Warriors are allowed full body contact in the pipe. So it's basically half pipe skating with football and basketball. The second event was Full Tilt. Each contestant would face the same Warrior one-on-one. Two stood on a large teeter-totter that tipped in alternating directions. No body contact allowed. And the player gets 15 seconds to score 5. And then for the full ride, it increased to 30. And if they knocked the Blade Warrior off, it was 20 points. But each side would be assessed a penalty if there was stay in the center for more than 3 seconds, or if there was contact.
Ooh, 3 second violations, sort of like basketball.
Exactly. Then you have Techno Tag. Both contestants play with four Warriors, each of whom had 4 light sticks attached to their person. Players attempted to steal these one at a time from the Warriors and place them into their power station for 4 points each. Then you have Slam Shot, which was basically hockey with 4 scoring areas. Ricochet was always played next to last, and this was actually, here's the thing, most of the events had the contestants face off against the Warriors. This one had the contestants teaming up with the Warriors against each other. A variation of basketball, each contender would choose a Warrior to be their teammate. Each tried to score a ball into their goal by ricocheting hits off a backboard into their scoring bin. Then you have Blockout. Each contestant faced a Warrior simultaneously for 60 seconds, who would attempt to guard a wall of 24 blocks. Each block beyond the boundary is worth a point. Then there's Tightrope. Contenders would face a different Warrior one-on-one for 60 seconds. Both contender and Warrior would hold out the bungee cords, allowing them to jump higher on the ramps and place a ball into one of 5 scoring trays. Each ball left in the tray was worth 4 points. And the final event was Steeple Skate, which was a one-on-one obstacle course, which featured, in order, 5 ramps, a pole slide, a climb up a flight of stairs, a climb down a flight of stairs, a rope climb, a bridge, a barrel run, 3 rope swings, and a quarter pipe to the finish line. All on rollerblades.
Wow.
The person who won Steeplescape is usually the Golden Snitch, who would get 35 points and the game. And theoretically, the end of the season, somebody would win $100,000. But we never saw the end of the season, because the syndicator ran out of money. I was a bit miffed at that. I remember watching this Saturday afternoons, right after American Gladiators ended. But that's all I remember.
All right.
Well, actually, that's not all I remember. Because remember, this was about the same time where people were starting to get all educational and informational, and they had to, you know, put in a bit of safety measures and safety films about it. So there was Blade Breaks, where you had public service announcements basically promoting skating safety. Oh, and the studio was sponsored by GNC.
Because of course.
Because of course it was. And that's basically all you need to know about Blade Warriors.
Well, I appreciate it because I'd never heard of this show.
No, neither did I. I didn't expect we were going to be covering this.
So this next show, this was actually an interesting show that aired in the late 90s and the early 2000s. It aired for 2 seasons.
Yes.
Yep. And it was created by the same guy who did Typo.
Billy yep. Blanks!
Billy Blanks, yes. This would be Battle Dome, which aired from September 4th, 1999 to April 1st, 2001 for 30 episodes. Okay, so American Gladiators was good. Battle Dome was going to be American Gladiators with the characters from Knights and Warriors. And like Knights and Warriors, there was a narrative in that.
What?
Yeah, there was a narrative in the Battle Dome. So imagine a boatload of warriors taking to the Battle Dome, and each one of them are competing for a championship belt in a week.
Wait, they're competing for a championship belt? Hey, Elegante, what do you have to say about that?
Oh, God.
I want the belt.
I want the belt. I want your belt.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming, and I did nothing to stop it. I don't regret one single thing. So there you go. Aside from the contenders competing against each other and against the Battle Dome Warriors, the Warriors were competing against themselves. And if you look at the sort of intro that every Battle Dome Warrior gets, like their walk-up music, Greg, you know what I'm talking about? Their walk-up music.
The walk-up music, like
not only
baseball
do they
game.
Have their own walk-up music, some of them have their own escorts.
Oh, escorts. You get escorts on this show.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, Odell, which is played by future American Gladiator Mike O'Hearn, had, are you ready for this?
What did he have?
He had the Dom Triplets.
Ooh, the Dom Triplets.
Yep. And sort of the emissary for the chairman, who is played theoretically by Billy Blanks, but we never see or hear the chairman. The emissary, Bobby Haven, is played by Bobby Brown, who you might remember as the hot chick in Warren's Cherry Pie video.
Oh, obviously not that other Bobby Brown.
No.
Or Millie Bobby Brown.
Or Bobby Christina Brown. Not her either.
No, not her either.
Rest in peace.
Yes.
So you have elements of pro wrestling mixed with the legitimacy, because this was legit.
This was 100% legit.
Yes. This was 100% legit. And you have three players competing against each other. And at the end of the season, because this was all a tournament, and at the end of the season, one person would win the Battle Dome title, and what was the prize for Battle Dome, I wonder?
Probably some money. And a belt.
Money and a car, probably. Money, a car, and a belt.
Yes, money, car, and a belt, I bet.
Yeah, they never said what it was, but I'm guessing money, car, and a belt.
Belt, you could show it off to everybody.
You could show off the belt, get the money.
Get the car. Be like Virgil, get that F money riding the car with your belt.
There you go. we have the events of the Battle Dome here. We have Battle Wheel, where two warriors competed. The events took place on a large rotating platform which resembled a right circular cone with its outside edge and apex flattened. Contestants have 60 seconds to force both warriors to touch the bottom ring with any part of their body. The warriors were allowed full body contact. They were allowed to do anything necessary to keep this from occurring. And oh god. One of the warriors had a nasty injury on the battle wheel toward the end of season one, which is why you didn't see much of Jake Fury after a while.
Oh.
We'll get to the warriors in a second. But yeah. Now, season two, they changed up the battle wheel to make the bottom wider, making it difficult for a contestant to defeat a warrior and also so to prevent ankle blowouts. Then you have Takedown, which is basically Breakthrough and Conquer without the Conquer.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. The third event was Roller Cage. In the first season, it was Roller Cage of Fire. In the second season, the fire was removed, obviously. But you had 60 seconds to get a warrior out of a cylindrical cage with strategically placed holes in it. The fourth event was aerial kickboxing.
Aerial kickboxing!
Aerial kickboxing.
Hey, Mike, you think King Arthur would be satisfied with aerial kickboxing?
Oh, I don't think he'd be satisfied until there's aerial MMA.
That's basically what this is. Okay, well, I'm going to try and read this with a straight face here. I'm a professional. Contenders and opposing warriors hung from undulating metal grids roughly 10 feet off the ground. The contender attempted to kick the warrior off the grid within 60 seconds without being removed from the grid themselves.
So they were on a grid.
They were hanging on a grid. Imagine Hang Tough, but with kicking.
With kicking.
Oh, jeez.
Kicks to the head were technically against the rules and would result in DQs. At least one contender was DQ'd because of headshots. However, the referee often looked the other way with the warrior who is usually playing this game, which is usually Bubba King, who kicked almost every contender in the head, but was only called on it once.
Oh, that's unfair. Those refs must have been on the take.
I imagine it was. Everybody else was on the take. Remember, characters, narrative. The next game is G-Force. A central rotating tower had three arms extending to the top of the central tower. Each of the contenders hung onto a handle at the end of each arm. A warrior stood on the platform above the tower, throwing balls at the contender as the tower spun. Tower speed increased steadily as the event progressed. The last contender standing earns 25 points. Then there was Battle Bridge. A large bridge spun quickly in midair. The contender and the warrior were each given a large padded club to use to knock the other off the bridge as it spun. Does this remind you of anything? And then there's Battlefield. Similar to Powerball on American Gladiators, contenders competed one-on-one against a single warrior who defended a single scoring bin. The scoring bin was located at the center of the playing field, at the top of an approximately 5-foot-tall pyramid. The warrior wore boxing gloves and could freely attack the contenders as much as they wanted to keep them from scoring. Then there was Battle Hoop. Contenders began in the center of a circular field. A large hanging hoop moved around the outside perimeter of the field, with its opening always facing the center of the field. A warrior stood on the outside perimeter of the field to block the contender from jumping through the hoop. Contenders had 60 seconds to try and jump through the hoop as many times as they could, returning to the center after each attempt. Then there is Battle Wall. Are you sense a theme here?
Everything has battle in it.
Contenders had to get over three walls defended by the Battle Dome Warriors. A warrior stood on the opposite side of each wall. Each wall was around 3 feet in height. The walls became narrower as the event went on, making it harder to get by the warriors. Each wall that a contender was successful in climbing was worth 25. And then you have Evader. A contender had to light targets while avoiding medicine balls being launched by two warriors. Contenders had 60 seconds to light up all the targets on the two towers, one at a time. Originally, the warriors only had to hit the contenders three times to end the match, but it was later increased to five. I'm guessing because they thought three was too easy and they wanted a little bit more action. Then there's anti-gravity. Always played last because of the point opportunities. Contenders had to light strips by hitting buttons on a grid while moving along handles placed on the grid. Every strip lit was worth 25 for a possible 150. Contenders were also chased by a Battle Dome Warrior, which was almost always the commander, and could lose the game in one of two ways, either by losing their grip, which would result in a contender floating away, or having the warrior rip off their harness and send them to the ground. And then there's Interceptor. Called a game of cat and mouse, a contender had to fly around the Interceptor grid, lighting targets worth 25 points until caught by the warrior. Again, almost always the commander. Each target was worth 25. There was a maximum of 175 points. And then there's the final event, the ultimate body slam. This was a tiebreaker, usually between the warriors for the right to hold the warrior belt.
I want the belt!
Yes, you want the belt. Okay, I get that. If the top warrior had been less than stellar and a fellow warrior close to the rankings had performed well, but not well enough to win the belt outright, the two warriors would compete in ultimate body slam. This game was simply a test of endurance. Each player stood on a platform behind a metal disc. The discs were then pulled back and slammed into each other at increasing rates of speed and velocity until one of the two fell off and lost. And those are the events.
Wow. Hey, did we mention who hosted Battle Dome?
Yeah, Battle Dome was hosted by a veteran broadcaster, an incredible broadcaster, guy by the name of Steve Albert.
Oh, yes, the brother of Morv Albert.
It looks like a younger version of Marv. Looks like a younger version of Morv Albert.
Now, wait, if we're talking about Steve Albert...
Oh, I know what you're going, Mike.
You're darn right I'm going to say it. And the thing is, this maybe is slightly derivative of our very derivative show here. Because Steve Albert, back in the early 90s, was with Jesse Ventura, was part of the show, The Grudge Match.
The Grudge Match!
Oh, and that we're going to cover one day, because I love The Grudge Match.
Oh, yes. Well, speaking of Jesse, we're going to be talking about him next month, too.
Oh, but yes.
We didn't mention the most famous person that came out of this show.
Wait a minute. We're not done with the hosts yet.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, his co-host on this show.
He had two co-hosts, one for season one and one for season two.
But this one I'm so excited about.
I know you're excited about this one. His season one co-host was Pharrell, a.k.a. Scott Pharrell. As in on CBS Sports Radio.
I was just going to say, are we talking about Pharrell from CBS Sports Radio? Oh, yeah. My gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we are.
If you've never heard Scott Pharrell, what is his voice sound like, guys?
He swallowed like a 20-pound bag of gravel.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
No, it's very coarse, very, very rough, yes.
Yes.
But I didn't know that's they're one and the same. That's great.
Yep. And then there is the second season host, which was Ed Lover, if you remember Ed and Dre from Yo MTV Raps back in the day.
Oh, who doesn't remember Yo MTV Raps?
And just so we're clear, not that one.
Not that Dr. Dre. There's two Dr. Dres. He's kind of like a variant of Dr. Dre, but not exactly. You know what I'm talking about, Chico.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Those are your hosts. Now let's talk about the Warriors. The series had 9 of them. One of them went on to become an American Gladiator. One of them went on to become the host of America's Got Talent. I'll leave it up to you to discern who had the better career move. Here's a hint. It wasn't the American Gladiator. All right, the first one is Bubba King, the king of aerial kickboxing. And yes, judging by his name, you would be right in assuming he's a bit of a good old boy. Know what I mean when I say a bit of a good old boy?
Oh, I hear you loud and clear. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
And again, he likes to say he's the king of aerial kickboxing. Very few defeats, almost invincible, and did not play any other event during the show's run. He was just on the
kickboxing.
On the aerial kickboxing. And he was played by a guy by the name of Timothy Elwell, who isn't known for doing much of anything else. He was in Cop Out as Officer Number 2.
Officer Number 2 in the Kevin Smith movie Cop Out.
He also played an officer in the original Charmed. And he sort of branched out on an episode of JAG where he played a guard.
Oh, wow! That's a great change of pace. He went from playing an officer to a guard.
And before that, he branched out further on an episode of Ellen where he played security guy. Our second warrior is the Commander, played by Christian Bevingt. The Commander, he is a jacked up army guy, basically. And his specialty event was anti-gravity, with Interceptor being a close second. He's one of the smaller warriors, but at the same time, he's very quick. And he's played by a guy by the name of Christian Bevingt, who was known mostly for playing, what is that, a snowy cone guy in Batman and Robin?
Oh yeah, because Mr. Freeze.
Yep, that's Mr. Freeze. He also played Grendel in Beowulf, Prince of the Gants. That's not the good version, by the way.
Okay.
And he played a bodyguard in the Daredevil movie, so.
The Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
Yes. Our third warrior is Kuda, who is the largest warrior during season one. He is, he practices the dark arts, let's just say.
The dark art? Is this like Doctor Strange in that episode of What If?
Yes, except there's a little bit more voodoo involved.
Oh.
He dominated on Battle Wheel, and he always appeared in the top position on this event. He made fleeting appearances on other events, and I will always remember him for a bit of a stunt he did with Jake Fury, which we'll talk about later, where he drank blood from a skull and turned Jake Fury into his human puppet.
What?
And then later, it was forbidden by the Undertaker.
You think I'm kidding? I'm not. Kuda was played by Rudolph Jones, and he was indeed a really huge guy. Next is DOA. Yes, that's his name. He made few appearances in season one, but became much more prolific in season two. His special event appeared to be Roller Cage. DOA, played by a guy by the name of Chad Bannon, who played Red Ape Soldier in the 2001 Planet of the Apes, New Club Bouncer at A Night at the Roxbury, and Beefy Guy, that is his name, Beefy Guy in an episode of VIP.
Oh, VIP!
I don't think he was in the VIP video game.
No, he was not.
I want to play as Beefy Guy in that video game.
Then you have Jake Fury, the wild and unpredictable wild guy. He was a Leatherman. He was a biker. He was able at G-Force and Evader, but he was not really good at any one game in particular. He suffered an ankle injury in season one, but he did return in season two, so good on him.
Yeah, good on him.
And he's played by Gary Casper. If I'm not mistaken, we talked about him on a previous installment.
We did?
I want to say we did. I don't know which one, though.
Which show? What, did you check his IMDb page?
I'm checking his IMDb page right now. It's full of a lot of listings of him as that guy in that thing. That tough guy in that thing. But it's probably not important.
No.
It's probably not important.
Yeah, we don't really have to be concerned about that. Okay, who else do we have in this show?
We have Michael O'Dell, played by Mike O'Hearn. As we all know, he was one of the gladiators on the 2008 American Gladiators reboot. Fun fact, he was actually an alternate gladiator that was never used on the original Gladiators.
Wow.
But yeah, O'Dell, for lack of a better phrase, is a pretty boy. Handsome, toned, jacked, and tanned. He is one of the best all-around warriors. He usually plays takedown, but he could have been seen playing aerial kickboxing as well. And then you have Payne. Yes, that's what they called him. Payne appeared during season one as cover for injured warriors. He was an alternate, basically.
Okay.
He entered the arena wearing a straitjacket and howling. He's played by John Sparandeo, who is known mostly nowadays as a camera person. Another alternate warrior was Sleepwalker, who I guess he was a bit of a mystic. We only saw him about once or twice, so... He was played by Woon Young Park, who is a stuntman by trade. And finally, the last of the season one warriors, a smug, arrogant, money-making pimp daddy, always accompanied by his posse, blinged up with jewelry and a dollar sign chain around his neck, always wearing a designer suit, and really good at a lot of games. He is, of course, T-Money.
T-Money!
And, of course, T-Money is played by Terry Crews. And if you don't know who Terry Crews is...
No. It's like, why are you even here? Go away. Just don't listen to this podcast anymore.
Really? Seriously? Okay. So... All the warriors, except for Payne and Sleepwalker, returned for season two, with new warriors Baby Blue, an alternate, played by Anthony McClanahan, who is unbeatable in takedown, Johnny Rocco, He was a Guido. He played Takedown and Battle Hoop a lot. Played by Ron Sorenzo. Snake.
What's wrong? Snake! Snake!
Who was, again, another all-around player. He was played by Jesse Justice Smith Jr. I believe he, too, was an American Gladiator in the 2008 reboot. Mad Dog Steel, who got injured early in season 2. Moose, who is an alternate warrior, and the biggest of all the warriors, and the prince. He was the prince. He looked like an Arabian knight, but he made on and off appearances throughout the season. Battle Wheel was his bag, played by Maximilian Atoki. And no, this is not vaguely racist at all. What are you talking about?
Okay, that's everybody.
Oh, wait a minute. There is one more.
Okay.
Justice Smith was also on Tough Enough, placing third.
Oh, what year? What season?
I think it was season 2, actually.
Oh, okay. That explains it.
So that was Battle Doom. Marv Albert's brother, Pharrell on the bench, the Dom triplets, Ed Lover from Yo MTV Raps, the host of America's Got Talent, and everybody else.
Oh, and would you believe that they did an angle with WCW?
Oh, God. Oh, Greg, I'm tapping you in on this one.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, they did like a spot with like Terry Crews fighting Rick Steiner on Battledome. I'll just play it right here. It's Team Money versus Rick Steiner. They should have had Scott do a promo about Terry Crews' chances of winning on Battledome against his brother.
Looks like he was up against his posse for a second there.
Yeah, hold on, let me play it.
So Breaks Mountain has hit the brakes, and wait a minute, what's this now?
What?
Team Money's theme music is open.
Oh my God, what is that?
Rick Steiner is doing a terrible cosplay as Team Money.
You ain't Team Money anymore, it's now all Rick's money. Because after tonight, Bubba, I don't have no you. I own that car. I own everything you
got. Oh, Rick wants the car. Oh, bring his... Now remember, Rick is a legit collegiate wrestler from the University of Michigan. So this is going to be an exciting contest.
Yes, and by the way, Terry Crews, former NFL player. So we have a collegiate wrestler and an NFL player. They're about to play Takedown. This is about to get... Bleep is about to get real quick.
So this has really become personal.
Oh! Hold on, I want to play it again. Look at this. By the posse.
So this has really become personal.
Terry just...
He just tapped him one, man.
He just tapped Rick on the face.
Tapped him one.
That's the first one that scores.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Wins. Set. Steiner on defense. T-Money on offense.
Oh!
Move into the glass. Down goes T-Money with Steiner on top.
This is becoming more of a brawl than a takedown event. And look at the WCW.
Oh no! Ernest Miller and Buff Bagwell have just... Oh, they've invaded and they're attacking them. Oh no, this is horrible.
And T-Money is taken down and he's being beaten.
This is unfair. This is 4-1. DDP's there too!
Workity, work.
Obvious work is obvious. Thanks, Dallas, though, for cutting that promo. And by the way, the Battle Dome people did appear on the November 6th, 2000 episode of WCW Monday Nitro to take it right back to the...
Did they beat down DDP?
Well, you have to watch it on Peacock, because you know, Peacock now has all the WWE Network stuff, so they have every episode of Nitro now. So you can go into the Nitro section on Peacock and watch that episode, so.
Ah. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
All right.
Okay.
So we got one more.
All right. American Gladiators in the Old West.
In the Old West, but not just in the Old West. It's like, Mike, remember the game Mad Dog McCree?
Oh, I remember that.
This is what it felt like watching this show. It felt like if you made an American Gladiators version of Mad Dog McCree.
Yep. Only replace the Gladiators with a band of outlaws. And replace the Contenders with a band of cowboys. Looking to enact law and order in a lawless stage. This is Wild West Showdown. It aired in syndication from September 17th, 1994 to March 11th, 1995.
See, this is just like Mad Dog McCree.
Broken necks, cowboys, are the murdering kind.
Oh.
That's what makes this the town from hell. But travelers head here anyways. They know the town's desperate to give $5,000 to anyone who can fix these cowboys. Three of them are on their way to try.
Oh, they...
Here they come. They've left the comforts of their lives to face an unknown fate.
My name is Nicholas Boscher. I was born in Burbank, raised in Northridge, and now I live in Los Dulce, California. I have two needs.
I don't understand this. So, this is set in the Wild West, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing, like, the contestants come in. They're dressed as cowboys, but we're seeing, like, their life. Like, I don't understand it at all. It's like, there's no, like,
cave. It's Westworld with less robots, Greg.
Oh, okay, so this is basically Westworld, but no robots.
Yeah. Except
everyone is, like, in that...
And nobody dies.
Nobody dies, but it's like that South Park episode where they're in the West, but no one refuses to break character.
No one refuses to break character, yes.
Okay, so that's what
it is. Except, of course, for their bios. And, of course, you have the outlaws... We're looking to mark their territory in the many events in the Wild West Showdown, each of them worth money to those who completed them, usually the fastest, the furthest, the quickest, whatever, what have you. And the player with the most money at the end of the showdown goes on to the final showdown for $5,000 reward money. Hey, if we're going to be in kayfabe, we're going to be in kayfabe all the way.
We're going to be in kayfabe the entire show, damn it.
Yep. And interestingly enough, that guy you heard in the opening, the guy who was, you know, all rough and tumble and ready and ready to go and listen to my rough and raggy voice, you know who played him?
Who?
Alex Arrowwolf Cord.
What?
Yep.
That was Alex Cord.
That was Alex Cord.
Oh, we just lost him this year recently.
Yes, we did. And it was
Within the last 2 months or so.
Oh.
But also, if you want a positive to all this, Greg.
Yeah.
He'll be a celebrity on the second to last week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Hold on. Wait, time out. Since we did say that he was on Airwolf, Mike, you know what we should play, considering who else was on Airwolf?
What should we play? What's that?
The Ernest Borgnine clip.
Oh no.
Play it.
I masturbate a lot.
That's for you, Alex Cord, wherever your ass.
We miss you.
We miss you, Alex.
We'll see in like 2 weeks on Match Game Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, because they resumed
the new episodes. Yes.
Yes, because they're on the week with Chuck Woolery and McLean Stevenson and everybody. Ah, can't get enough of more McLean. But all right, let's get on with this. Do we have anything else to add about Wild West Showdown?
Only that the person who was on the field, the field correspondent, was a very young Lisa Guerrero.
Yes, Lisa Guerrero.
Before her career blew up.
Yeah, because of course, obviously Monday Night Football, and oh, guys. She was the co-host on Sports Geniuses on FSN with Matt Vasgersian.
Yep. Yeah, and as we like to remind everybody, Matt Vasgersian was a contestant on Supermarket Sweep.
Say it, Mike.
What's a heifer? Oh, sorry.
A heifer.
What's a heifer?
Heifer.
Think about a heifer.
Run, Matt, run. Just run.
Think about a heifer having a hysterical time at a comedy club. What is a heifer? Where are we going?
And the announcer, we mentioned him on this episode already, Joe Fowler.
Oh, yes! See, this is quality. Joe Fowler began this episode and he ended this episode.
Yep.
Because if you want quality, you get Joe Fowler.
He has the quality voice.
Oh, he does.
And again, very excitable, the Joe Fowler.
Oh, I can't wait till next month when we talk about him again. It'll be an amazing episode. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. All right. So, yeah, unfortunately, this didn't last too long. As I said, this reminded me a lot of Mad Dog McCree, so...
I have a listing of the events here.
Oh, okay. What are the events?
Okay, we have Rawhide, where in which a cowboy was dragged behind by an outlaw horse and attempted to reach a release rope to break away in the fastest time.
Yeah, that looked like a dangerous game.
But they were all on leather mats, so it's safe.
Okay.
Stagecoach. The cowboys ride a galloping horse, try to catch up with the runaway stagecoach, mount it, and stop it. Saloon Brawl. A player had 45 seconds to pull an outlaw out of the saloon in a one-on-one tug of war. Played somewhat similar to Conquer of American Gladiators. Next there is Water Tower. Similar to the Wall, the cowboys would have 45 seconds to scale a water tower and defuse a bomb at the top of said water tower. Meanwhile, the outlaw is chasing them, and the cowboys and the outlaws would begin on opposite sides of the tower. And if you fail to do so, the water tower explodes. So there's that.
Okay.
Then there's Ambush. Players run about the town while dodging enemy fire from up to 4 or 5 outlaws. Cowboys were rewarded cash for each outlaw hit and could get a bonus for hitting every outlaw. Getting hit once by an outlaw ended the event. Logjam. Similar to the breakthrough portion of Breakthrough and Conquer, the cowboys would have to cross a river full of logs within 45 seconds while being chased by an outlaw. And then there's the Pony Express, where the cowboys would compete in a race against each other through town on horses, picking up bags of cash along the way. The one who crosses the finish line first wins. And like I said, there are usually 5 events in every episode. Each event is worth money. The first 2 were worth 100, the next 2 $150, and the last one for 200. But the player with the most money advances to the final showdown. And in the final showdown, a run through the town, climbing over buildings to reach a bag of cash to get to a horse and make a getaway through the town within a 2-minute time limit without getting hit by the outlaws shooting paintball bullets at them. If they succeeded, they won 5,000. But if they survived but took more than 2 minutes to complete all the tasks, you still get a $1,000 bonus. And that was Wild West Showdown.
All right.
Now, I have the names of, well, I don't have the kayfabe names of the outlaws, but I do have the names of the outlaws here. They were Sandy Berriman, Tramell James, Lynn Jonkowski, Cheryl Lawson, Jensen Keith Lynn, Jeff Manzanares, Kerry Maureen Mellon, Randall Oliver, Jason Reigns Rodriguez, Con Shell, and Craig Branham. Now, if Craig Branham sounds familiar, he was actually the grand champion of season 2 of American Gladiators.
Oh,
okay.
I only remember that because I rewatched that episode that they took off the American Gladiators channel off of Pluto, by the way. R.I.P. the American Gladiators channel.
Oh, it's ended now?
It's ended now.
Oh.
Boo.
I'm guessing they're now going to Prime since MGM now owns it.
Probably. I mean, that would make sense. But yeah, that was Wild West Showdown. It was like American Gladiators in the Old West.
Greg here. One thing we didn't mention during the taping of this episode was that Wild West Showdown is actually produced by the Samuel Goldwyn Company, which is the company that produced and syndicated American Gladiators. So that would make sense as to why it's so similar to American Gladiators and a whole bunch of other things.
All I can say is, can we watch the final showdown? Because I can't think of anything to say about this show. You basically have 2 minutes to run through the town, grab money, get on your horse, beat it out of town. So now that you think about it, wouldn't the Cowboys be the ultimate bad guys?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Well, there's a bag with money in it waiting for Sherry if she gets through town in one piece. If she don't, we'll use the bag to send her home.
Sherry's sure gonna be earning
her money if she gets.
That was very dark, Alex. Scored.
Three fingers on the roof, Silk on the porch, Badger and Chance guarding the balcony, and George in the corral. They're all hankering to hit her with a paint bullet and keep her money. Sherry chooses the easy way through town, over the rooftops. She pulls hard to get on that first roof. Bull's waiting for her. He always likes a good gun battle. He's out of bullets, and Sherry makes a run for it.
Up he's out of bullets. Ladder, he's out of bullets. Everybody's out of bullets.
Sure is straining hard. Another rooftop. Another gunfight. This time with three fingers. He runs out of ammo too. Must be a shortage in town. Sherry leaps to the
has
next.
Has anyone ever hit one of the outlaws?
She's coming. I don't know. It looks hard.
What would happen if one of them hit? And one of them was hit.
Sherry would the game
rides
end?
A ladder across to the boarding house. That's how the women boarders get most of their visitors. She's down the chimney and out the door to her bag of $1,005 bills.
Oh,
that's gonna make $1,005 mattress. Now she just has
then she's ziplining to her horse.
Getting shot. She hits the
all she has to do now is live.
George don't want to leave in town.
That he hit her!
Oh, there you go. He dies.
Are we supposed to believe he's dead?
Now, if her horse ain't been drinking his own liniment, she's heading
what?
To tell her kid how she was the hero of Broken Neck.
Why would a horse drink his own liniment?
Sherry, you are one tough lady.
I don't
know. You are fast, too, because you completed the final showdown round in a minute and 45 seconds. You won $5,000.
Thanks a lot, Kate.
Thanks, Lisa Sherry. Guerrero.
Time today. I had a blast. It was
good
to be here.
Go spend your money.
I'm out of here. See ya.
Bye.
Oh, there she goes on the horse.
And you know what? Props to everybody for staying committed to the bit.
Yes.
They stayed in kayfabe.
Except not really, because, well, $5,001 bills or $1,005 bills.
That's what Alex Quinn said, is $1,005 bills. Was it like the time when freaking Charlie Ebersole had to give Marshawn Lynch all those quarters for that interview?
Probably.
That's a callback.
Ain't it just, though? Okay.
Oh, and also one thing I want to add.
Yeah.
Lisa Guerrero, do you know who she's married to?
Who's she married to?
Okay, Greg, here's a name from almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago or so.
Who is it?
Do you remember the pitcher for the Orioles, Scott Erickson?
Yes, I do remember Scott Erickson.
That's her husband.
Wow. They're married.
That's it. That's it.
Scott Erickson is married to Lisa Guerrero.
I'm
that
out of
is,
here.
That is fantastic.
It's just not, it's not fair. Life is not fair. Life is officially not fair.
You know what? Scott Erickson, he was a fine pitcher, but he was no Mike Mussina.
He was a good complimentary piece.
He was a
Mike
compliment
Mussina.
To Mike Mussina on the Orioles.
But he was not a Hall of Famer. No.
No, Mike Mussina was, he had like that head move whenever someone was on base. That, you know what I'm talking about. A little kind of shake whenever someone's on base, so you can make sure you pick them off, just make sure where the runner is. I love that. Okay, so all these shows tried to compete with American Gladiators, tried to capture that American Gladiators magic, but
try to get that American Gladiators money.
But in the end, all four of these shows, they were just things on TV.
Yep.
Oh, and we didn't even scratch the surface, really. We could have talked about Gladiators 2000, the kids' version of Gladiators, with a quasi-educational sort of vibe.
Yeah.
But also, we could have mentioned Guts. But,
we could have mentioned Guts. I'll
Guts
tell you right
no
now.
Place on this show.
Tell you right now, put Gladiators 2000 up against Guts. Sorry, Ryan Seacrest. Guts wins every time.
I forgot Ryan Seacrest was on Gladiators 2000.
Oh, yeah.
He was Gladiators 2000.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it made his career like Wings made Tony Shalhoub's career.
He's not wrong.
You hear no disagreement from me.
Woo!
Odor blocker body wash is too powerful to let this commercial in.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Just when it seemed we couldn't go any higher or make our batteries last any longer, we at Duracell topped ourselves. Introducing the new highly improved Copper Top battery. So improved, it'll last up to 30% longer than any battery we've ever made. Once again, Duracell reaches a new height. Duracell, when it comes to making them last longer, we never stop.
Tuesday on Who's the Boss? Tony and Angela are in a compromising position.
Isn't this easy?
It's a piece of cake.
Then on Growing Pains.
I need Springsteen tickets.
We could either afford to send you to college or we could buy those tickets.
I think you made the right choice.
It's Springsteen Fever on ABC. Then, where are these people going and why are they dressed like this?
What is going on?
Find out on Moonlighting, the perfect romantic comedy.
No one under 17 admitted without parent or guardian.
You'll love it!
Tuesday. Tootsie, tonight's ABC's Sunday night movie will continue in a moment.
James Mackey and Nick Fox, investigative reporters making the news in a high fashion world.
This is going to be on a level.
What I put you on?
The Insiders at 8, 7 Central.
The Moonshine!
destroys the city. What could he want? Unless we find something to appease him. We're doomed!
Hold out, hold out. Hurry out of the ordinary. Hold out for Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper!
Ace is the place.
Hey, Gene, can you give me a hand here?
Be right with you, John.
Thanks. Let me tell you, Jean's my favorite helpful hardware person. She knows everything. How to fix stuff, what tools to use, the right kind of paint to buy. Hey, there's nothing she doesn't know.
So how can I help you today, John?
I just got a couple jobs.
Well, nothing we can't handle. Let's start with toggle bolts.
Toggle bolts?
Ace is the place.
She knows just what to do and how to do it. Hey, let me tell you, Ace is a place for me.
What happens when the perfect wife goes public?
I'm a wife for hire.
How does it feel to share your wife with other men?
Just look how many husbands you've got.
I know when you're enjoying yourself, and what I saw was major enjoy.
What a wife.
Robert Klein flips for Pam Dauber in the upside-down comedy, This Wife for Hire, Wednesday at 9 on USA.
Saturday on Airwolf.
Ambush time.
A civil war in Africa pits Hawk against his former commander in a desperate one-on-one duel. Then a photographer uncovers a deadly racket.
Somebody didn't like what Bobby found.
Trying to find his friend's murderer, Mike falls in love with a cover girl who isn't telling everything she knows. On Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, right after Airwolf Saturday.
Episode 204, Submission 1723. The MLB versus celebrity softball game from 1967. Well, guys, we know every year during the All-Star game, they always have that Taco Bell celebrity All-Star game.
Yes.
I was there 2 years ago, yes.
Well, I was there in 2013 when the All-Star game was at Citi Field.
I was never at a celebrity All-Star Pro-Am baseball game.
Well, that's your loss. Yeah, it's always the same day as the Futures game. And I remember it was a hot day at Citi Field in 2013. And I just sat for most of the day in the Caesars Club at Citi Field, enjoying my hot dogs, enjoying my air conditioning. I was living the life in there. It was great.
Yeah, meanwhile, when I went to the game, I showed up a little late because I misread the ticket. I thought the game started at like, I think it was like 6 o'clock, and I got a text from a friend of mine saying, are you at the game? And I'm like, no, the game doesn't start till six. And he's like, no, the celebrity softball game started at four. And so I hurried my butt down there and saw like the last inning or two, but I got to see the whole Futures game.
Yeah. When I was there, it was like the Futures game was first, and then the celebrity game. So,
see, that's what I thought was going to happen, was the celebrity game would be second, and the Futures game would be first. No, they reversed it. The celebrity softball game was first, and then the Futures game. Well, I'm not going to lie. I wanted to see the Futures game. I don't want to say I didn't care about the softball game, but really, you know, the only reason I would have, you know, gone to the softball game on time was because Scott Rogowski was there. And I wanted to, like, swear at him for saying that my cat was a bunny.
Oh.
Can you explain this story for those who don't know?
Yeah, please explain the story.
Ah, jeez. Okay, so this is probably about 3 years ago now. And one of the games that the three of us used to play, and I know other people did too, hey, Rick, was HQ. And the avatar I used at HQ after a while was my cat sticking out its tongue. And
it was cute.
It's an adorable cat. She's over here somewhere. She'll be 12 in a couple weeks. And so I made the leaders board or the winners board that night, and they show all the winners. But you know, if you've got like hundreds or thousands of winners, it'll show like the first like 50 or so. And then you run out of time as you scroll through. And so I happened to be near the top of the winners board. And Scott Rogowski made a comment saying, oh, isn't that a cute bunny or some animal? And Greg was there when I heard this, and so was Chico. And I said, my cat's not a bunny. She's a calico cat. She doesn't look anything like a bunny.
He might have been watching Tenchi Muyo at the time. I don't know.
Ohio? Something or other? You're a bunny rabbit? I don't know what you...
But Noodles is not a bunny. She's a little kitty cat.
She's a cute kitty cat. Well, but anyway...
But anywho, getting back to our story.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before all these all-star celebrity softball games with ex-MLB players...
I have the 2021 lineup. I'm looking right now. It's like, I would like to see Quavo, JoJo Siwa, Steve Aoki, the guy from Riverdale, the guy from 13 Reasons Why, and The Miz playing against the likes of CeCe Sabathia, Jenny Finch, Hunter Pence, Larry Walker, and Vinny Castilla.
Hey, Jenny Finch is like a staple in the game.
Jenny Finch is legendary.
Well, she's legendary, but she played in the game in Cleveland. And actually, so did The Miz. Well, no surprise, The Miz was there. But also, we had like Simone Biles. Yeah, we had a pretty star-studded lineup.
And best of all, I'd be remiss to mention that recently, as we record this the previous week, The Miz was on Celebrity Wheel of Fortune with Jason Alexander.
Yeah. And The Miz is also on Dancing with the Stars with JoJo Siwa.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine The Miz and JoJo Siwa on a celebrity softball team?
I can see it, actually.
Yeah.
It's JoJo freaking Siwa. She could do anything.
I hope The Miz, like, convinces JoJo Siwa to appear at WrestleMania in Dallas. That'd be great.
That would be amazeballs.
Okay. But before all these softball games, in 1967, we had the stars of Major League Baseball competing against the celebrities at the time at Dodger Stadium. And would you believe they got to announce this game? The legendary Vin Scully.
I'm not surprised one bit. Not surprised one single bit.
Yeah, because if this is at Dodger Stadium, who else do you have to get?
He is the Dodgers.
He is Mr. Dodger.
He is the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. But, okay. You ready for the managers for each team? Okay. Managing the Major League Baseball All-Stars. Uncle Milty, Milton Berle.
Oh, God, how? Oh, God, how?
That's what I want to know.
Like, how does this even happen?
I don't know, but Uncle Milty managing the likes of Willie Mays and Willie McCovey and Don Drysdale. Oh, that's fantastic. But managing the celebrity All-Stars. Chico, we talked about him last year in the Mystery Ed episode.
Yeah.
Leo DeRocher. I'm surprised Mr. Ed didn't help him out with the lineup. Maybe he helped him out with the celebrity lineup. Who knows?
Maybe so. Oh, you know who was also in the booth with Vin Scully?
Who?
Jerry Lewis.
Oh, Jerry Lewis.
Oh, jeez.
Lady!
A lady!
All right. We're going to watch this celebrity game together.
We are going to watch the celebrity game together because this needs to be seen. In all of its goofy glory, all of its goofy logo, goofy uni glory.
All right, here we go.
The first annual All-Star Celebrity Game.
It sounds like a circus.
It does. Look at this guy. Ah, this guy slipped. Don Allen. Woody Allen. Bobby Darin. Peter Falk. James Garner. Jose Jimenez.
Robert Loja.
Brian O'Neill. Dick Shawn. Larry Storch.
Leo DeRocher as the manager. And Jerry Mathers as the beaver.
Versus. Roberto Clemente, Don Drysdale, Ron Hunt, Tom Kill,
Harvey Kildrew, Willie Mays,
Jimmy Pearsall, Brooks Robinson, Maury Wells, Major Mil... Oh my god! Oh, manager? Manager? Milton Berle?
He didn't know either.
They had question marks.
Like, and you could tell this is the late 60s because the credits for each of the players, well, first off, the fonts and the colors, it's very fast moving. And really, you guys are going through the credits. I can barely see them. Maybe it's my old age. Maybe it's my eyes. But, gee, it was a very psychedelic.
It was. Oh, yeah. It was
definitely late 60s.
This one gets filed under that font.
That ugly-ass font.
That ugly-ass font, though.
You know, again, late 60s.
Celebrity baseball game is brought to you by Aurora Plastics Corporation, world's largest manufacturer of hobby products, makers of model motoring, miniature auto racing.
Ooh.
Best. Ooh, I remember those.
The next best thing to having a bowling alley in your living room.
Oh,
and postage stamp trains.
Postage stamp trains.
Remember to spit.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Vin Scully from Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. And for expert
damn
analysis
right it is.
On the inside of today's game, here is Jerry Lewis.
Thank you, Vince. This is the Jewish Joe Garagiola talking to you from Dodger Stadium.
Boo!
Boo!
They had the umpires walk in, and they had the video board.
You know the umpires are bad when the video boards are giving you the business.
And now we got Milton Berle and Leo DeLocher giving out the lineups.
And Milton Berle's basically trying to argue about something. Maybe where he wants to eat dinner after this is over. I don't know. I've been around a long time.
I'll say it now. Turn it up a little bit.
Notice that Milton Berle has his last name on the back of his jersey.
Yeah.
And Leo DeRocher just says Leo.
Leo.
Because we can't. If we tried to spell DeRocher, we'd be here all day.
Well, no, I'm looking at it not because of the spelling, but Leo DeRocher is that much of a legend, he can just go on a first name basis.
Oh, yeah.
Not that Uncle Milty can't, but yeah, Leo DeRocher, Leo, we know who he is.
All right. Well, we got a commercial right here. Let's hear this commercial.
The most popular indoor hobby sport in America.
Ooh!
The cars you're watching now are Thunder.
Who's slot racing?
By Aurora.
I was just about to say that.
2 inches long. That's HO scale. The next size up is 1/32nd scale. Much bigger. HO
wow.
Gives you twice the action in half.
Really
space.
Big slot car racing.
Cobblestone track. Bump track. Squeeze track.
Hot Wheels ain't got nothing on this.
Thunderbikes.
Oh, I used to have that as a kid. That was so fun.
Thunderbikes.
The control of these cars is in your hands. You barrel down the straightaways, but watch those curves.
Watch those curves.
HO scale.
What? Wait, what did he say?
HO scale.
All this excitement comes in this package. If we still haven't convinced you to go HO, then by all means go to the larger scale. We make that too.
Eh, if you don't like the small scale, eh, you go to the larger size. We don't care.
Yeah, I had that as a kid. I think Tyco made it. You have the little
trigger to control
the cars. Yeah.
Yeah, and Tyco would make a whole lot of stuff, including the Viper set.
All right, let's get back to the game right here.
Coming up in the first inning for the All-Stars will be Maury Wills, Brooks Robinson, and Roberto Clemente in the celebrity infield holding the meeting at the mound of Cassavetes, Loggia, Don Adams, Sean, Bear the catcher, and the...
You know, it's surprising seeing Maury Wills at Dodger Stadium not in a Dodgers uniform because he was on the Pirates at this time.
Yeah, look, Maury Wills is actually in a Pirates uniform, which is kind of odd because I associate him with the Dodgers. And I think Greg does, too.
It's like, how long was he in Pittsburgh.
Let me get Truth by Consensus Wikipedia. I'm using the mobile version of.
Because if you knew him as a Dodger, he couldn't have been in Pittsburgh that long.
Right? Hey, Greg, in this case, I've got better than Truth by Consensus Wikipedia. I've got real Sports Truth by Consensus Baseball Reference.
Okay, got it.
He was only in Pittsburgh for two seasons, 67 I figured as much.
So this is 67. This is his first season with the Pirates.
Yeah. And then actually he spent every other season in Los Angeles except for 47 games in 69 with Montreal.
Nice.
So that would have been the Expos expansion season.
Right. So, yeah, he would have spent like 11 and a half years with the Dodgers. So, yeah, well known with the Dodgers. Different seeing him with the Pirates in this case.
To Jim Garner. Maury Wills, who hit 300 for the Pirates this year, will lead it off as he returns to Dodger Stadium in a Pittsburgh uniform.
Did you just say Dodgers Stadium?
Some. All right, so Jim Garner's pitching.
Some of the announcing is going to be marvelous, too.
Wills loops one into left field, and it drops in front of
yeah!
the base hit.
Oh, that hurt. That
ball away. Nice slide.
By the way, Jerry Lewis on the call. Not too bad.
All right, so we got Maury on first right here. Brooks Robinson at the plate.
Softball game, of course. The pitcher's mound is not 60 feet 6 inches away, but more of...
By the way, did you notice that the dirt
so
is covered up?
On
the yeah, infield. What's that about?
Line drive base.
Well, I know it's like softball, but... Oh, wait a minute. It's because it's softball. That's right.
Wills goes yeah. to third.
Well, yeah, they just mentioned that softball's pitching area is only 40 feet away, not 60 feet 6 inches.
Which is why he has a track instead of a bat.
To Wills and Robinson, yeah. And the National League batting champion from the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, the legendary Roberto Clemente.
R.I.P.
Softball was originated by a fireman from the Minneapolis Fire Department back in 1895.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Vin dropping that knowledge on us. A fireman invented softball.
I'm glad they're playing
don't
in for
get
them.
That sort of knowledge. That would
but he had a rip, didn't get it, and the count 1-1. Infield up, as you see. Woody Allen, the short fielder. Line drive.
Wait, Woody Allen, the short fielder?
Going back to second base, recovered by Don Adams as Will scores.
Taking yeah, third, Woody Allen, the very short. The very short stop.
Okay, how do we score that? All right, as a guy who does this for a living, how do we score that? I'm guessing we call that a single, right?
You're the expert, so I'm going to defer to you.
I would agree.
An RBI infield single for Roberto Clemente gives the MLB's closer 1-0.
And I've never heard Robert Loggia called Bob Loggia before, or however he
Bob,
says it.
Bob Loggia.
Wait a minute. Hold up. You know what people's first reaction was when they found out that Robert Loggia was playing in this celebrity softball game? Whoa, Robert Loggia!
May I have your name, please?
Robert Loggia.
Can you spell that for me?
Certainly. That's Robert Loggia. R as in Robert Loggia. O as in, oh my God, it's Robert Loggia. B as in, by God, that's Robert Loggia. E as in everybody loves Robert Loggia. R as in Robert Loggia. T as in Tim, look over there, it's Robert Loggia. Space. L as in look, it's Robert Loggia.
Hey Mike, do you think Robert Loggia told all the MLB players about how good orange juice is?
I'm pretty sure.
Hey, Willie Mays, I think you should drink some orange juice. Yeah.
Drink your orange juice, kid.
Yeah.
I actually hope that Robert Loggia went to, like, the seamstress or whoever put the names on the back of the jerseys. My name's Robert Loggia. That's Robert Loggia. R as in Robert Loggia. O as in, oh my gosh, that's Robert Loggia. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, let's resume.
1,000 painted seats.
The great Willie Mays at the plate.
Oh.
And hold everything, manager Leo DeRocher of the Celebrities going to the mound.
Wait. Okay.
He's not going to do a pitching change.
Already?
No.
It's 1-0.
What are you doing? There's no outs in the first inning.
Watching the newcomer make his way to the mound.
What
Hold
are you
on.
Doing?
This is important. Listen to what Vin's going to say here.
The pitcher coming into the ballgame by the name of Billy Starr, who has been introduced as the star of a new Western on television. The professional baseball players think, therefore, he's an actor. But in all honesty, Jim Garner leaving the field is being replaced by one of the great softball pitchers of all time, Ed Fainter, star of The King and His Court.
Oh, so Leo got... Oh!
Wow! He put some extra zip in that one.
Somebody better make a citizen's...
Oh, the celebrity's got a ringer.
Yeah.
All right, Willie Mays will be up there now with a run.
And guess who he's facing? He's facing Willie Mays. So Leo probably was like, yeah, I'm going to... Going to show Willie off
here.
Worry
about that after you hit it, Willie.
The ball, of course, in softball is much bigger than a baseball.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Can you carry it in your hand?
Who knows if it's bigger than a bread box?
Oh, there's Dick Shaw in the first baseman. Let's see. New pitcher.
Knock him down. Don't hit him. Just knock him. I said throw close to him this time.
Tom Gorman of the National League has heard Leo rumble before.
One of Leo's famous pupils was Willie Sutton.
Oh!
Like I said, that had some zip on it.
Yeah. All stars in the first inning.
That reminds me a little bit of that Randy Johnson pitch against John Cruyff in the All-Star game.
Oh, in 93? That was a great moment.
Was it 93? Yeah. Well, you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little later than 93, but...
It was at Camden Yards. Yeah.
John Cruyff fanning himself off. Johnson has had pitches clocked at as much as 102 miles per hour in Major League play.
Now, this ball obviously just getting away from him, but watch the reaction of John Cruyff. Would you say his heart is palpitating a bit?
When the second half resumes on Thursday.
Look at the next step. I don't blame John one bit on his right leg.
He bailed out again at the breaking ball.
He wants no part of Randy Johnson. None.
Is it this kind of response?
I don't think so. You knew that was coming. John had no chance.
But I remember a similar thing happened in 98 with Larry Walker. And didn't Larry Walker, like, after he got brushed back a little bit, he wore his batting helmet backwards?
I think you're right, yes.
Yeah, that was hilarious. All right.
And he's wondering, what is going on here?
One ball and one strike. Fastball.
Oh!
That's what's going on here, Willie Mays.
Willie wants to know if it's something he said.
Yes.
Yes, it was, Willie.
1-2 to the great center fielder of the Giants, Willie Mays. Time call. Willie was afraid he'd be quick pitched. He'll get it anyway, one way or the other. 1-2.
But he's... What was that?
Oh, my gosh.
That was magic was what that was. That
First
was
time I ever
voodoo.
Saw Willie smiling, walking away from the plate, struck out.
One away, and the batter now, the great home run hitter, Harmon Killebrew.
Oh, Harmon Killebrew.
Harmon Killebrew is now working at an AMP in Newark.
That's a strike. 1-1.
Foul tip.
The All-Star is delighting, actually, in being shown up. Strike three.
Oh.
Or the other foul tip.
Oh,
Killebrew goes down, so two strikeouts.
The two outs.
Killebrew.
Now we got
batter from the San Francisco.
Yeah, William
Giants
McCovey now at the plate. All right, so can he? Oh, did you see that? He threw the pitch like right behind his back. That was
what? Oh my gosh!
What?
No, I saw it. I just can't believe that happened.
Oh my god, that was incredible.
That is unbelievable.
Oh. All right, 0-1 to Willie here. Oh.
0-2.
He's one pitch away from striking out the side.
I get the feeling this Eddie Fennis show.
Come on, Willie McCovey. What is he? What is he doing?
Where'd it go? Where's the ball?
Where's the ball?
Art Passarella, the American League plate umpire, saying, hold everything. You've got to throw the ball to be able to hit it.
And by the way, we should note Art Passarella was the umpire on Home Run Derby.
Okay.
Yeah. The, right. You remember Home Run Derby, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Home Run Derby with Mark Scott.
Yeah, I remember Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
That's a hidden ball trick by the pitcher.
Is he using a spitter? If he is, let him hit the dry side of the ball.
1-2. Down he goes.
Yay!
Killebrew and McCovey strike out. The All-Stars in the first inning. One run, three hits, no errors, two men left. Great relief by Ed Fainter.
Okay, so now we're going to have the celebrities come up to bat in the first inning. We got Don
and
Dreisaitl.
Surprise, surprise. No one looks like they know what they're doing.
Boosting up now for the All-Stars, your right-hander Don Drysdale. Behind the plate, one of the World Series heroes of the St. Louis Cardinals, Tim McCarver.
Now we got Woody Allen batting leadoff.
Oh, Woody gosh.
Allen. How tall would you say he is? 3'5".
He's sort of like a man, 3'6". I like his number, Jerry.
Yeah.
Number zero.
Appropriate.
DeRocher telling the umpire to watch the strike zone. Ground ball hit down to shortstop Wills. Morey flips across to first to McCovey. One away.
That Woody's all man.
The one out in the bottom of the first. 1-0 in favor of the All-Stars. And the
Bobby Darin now at the plate.
The Polish Prince. About to put a little polish on this ball.
I want to see him swing and snap his fingers at the same time.
Ground ball inside.
Oh, that was a nice hit down the line.
Armin Killebrew gets the ball back in. The Bobby Darin.
I am beginning to think that Bobby Darin is a bit of a ringer.
The batter will be Bob Loggia.
Bob Loggia.
Whoa, Robert Loggia's at the plate.
Well, who would you believe?
I don't know. Robert Loggia? Whoa, Robert Loggia.
Yeah, he used to go under the name of Miriam Hopkins.
One ball and no strikes.
Oh.
Hit by the pitch.
Oh, no, he hit Robert Loggia. Don Drysdale hit Robert Loggia. I think he hit him literally on the ass.
You did get him on the backside, it looks like.
Yeah.
All right. Yep, he's rubbing his back. He's rubbing his front. Be careful. Any more than three times, that he can't broadcast that.
All right, Jeffro hits that foul.
I love the way they're scrambling for the ball. Then when somebody gets it, they say, who hit it?
1-1, the count to Max Baer Jr. Runners at first and second. One out in the first inning. 1-0, All-Stars. Drive to left field. Killebrew goes to the line and makes the catch. And the runners have to hold.
All right, two down.
Hit the ball hard, but at Killebrew. The batter now, first baseman Dick Shawn.
Dick Shawn now at the plate.
And I noticed they threw the bat.
Professional ball.
Yes.
Before I got in the show business.
But I did not see where anyone was visibly frustrated, so.
Two out, two on, first inning, 1-0 All-Stars. Little looper over short, but backing up easily. And
whoa, but that was an out all day.
So in the first inning,
that was an out all day.
There is two men left, and at the end of one, All-Stars one, Celebrity.
That wasn't too bad. That wasn't too bad of an inning, though.
No. So one inning down, it's 1-0 in favor of the MLB All-Stars.
I'm waiting for all the crazy to happen.
Dale Robertson.
When am I going to get all the crazy?
The celebrities, and he looks like he has played a little softball. So Jim Garner, relieved by Ed Fainer in the first inning, surrendered the run. And now Dale Robertson pitching without a cap.
He couldn't get a hat to fit over his hair.
It's a little dangerous, guys, don't you think, to pitch with no hat?
Well, that's look at that coif, though.
Yeah, I know.
For all we know, he could be wearing a hat underneath his hair.
His hair may be a hat.
His hair might be a hat.
At the same time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Ron Hunt was at the Dodgers at this time, former New York Met. Ron Hunt would usually get hit by a pitch a lot. I think he might have had the hit by pitch record before Don Baylor broke it.
In the dirt, ball one. The All-Stars leading the celebrities 1-0. We're in the top of the second inning. Down ball down to third base, fielded there.
Oh.
Cassavetes, and the that's a single. Is mislaid.
He made the mistake of using the glove.
The batter now, switch hitter and short fielder for the Dodgers, Jim Lafitte.
Oh, is he? Oh, he's looking to steal a base there for a second. Before the game, no bunting allowed. Ground ball. Well, no bunting allowed, but that was just as good. It was like a non-sacrifice there. Ground ball, the infield advances the runner right there. And now Tim McCarver at the plate. Ron Hunt.
And I almost feel tempted to put in here Tim McCarver saying, you're a real man, Dion.
You are a real man. You know that? Yes. You are a real man, Dion. I'll say that.
That was probably the best moment ever.
If the celebrities make the top of the fourth, they're going to have a victory dinner.
You're a real man, Dion.
High pop fly to the right side, Don Adams.
Don Adams. Makes it look easy. So Maxwell Smart with the pop up there.
You'd never know it was Don.
Two out.
Who would you think it was? Miriam Hopkins.
Oh, now Don Drysdale at the plate. Getting a nice ovation from the hometown crowd.
And Dale Robertson still smiling.
I think the squeeze is on.
Hey, guys, you know, if we had a Taco Bell Celebrity All-Star game in 2022, you know, it would be great to have up at the plate in a Taco Bell Celebrity All-Star game, thinking about pitchers hitting.
Who would that be?
Big Bart Bartolo Colon. Could you imagine Bartolo Colon at the Taco Bell Celebrity All-Star game at the plate?
Oh, I'd pay to see that.
I would pay you Texas with the dollar sign to see that.
Oh, big money. Everyone would want to see that. It'd be great. See if he could go deep again. All right.
Max Baird Jr. with a few words to play to
pitch off Titus Burgess. No. I was simply naming a random celebrity.
Ball three.
I can't imagine Titus Burgess at a Celebrity All-Star game.
3-1 to Drysdale. Two out, Ron Hunt at second base. 1-0 All-Stars.
Oh, walk.
Walk it out.
A run is at first and second. Two out, and the batter.
That guy looks like Jack Lord, I swear to God.
A single to left field, opening up the ball game. He's one for one.
Okay, we got Maury Wills back at the plate, so top of the order now.
That's Dale Robertson, not Jack Lord.
Not Jack Lord.
Although he looks like Jack Lord.
Pitching to Maury Wills right here. Oh, that's going to go in. And that's going to score Ron Hunt. 2-0.
And it is now 2-0 in favor of the All-Stars.
Leo is out to the mound again, and he's like, yeah, he knows he's done.
There's one drastic change in today's game from any other game.
How many pitchers does he have in his bullpen?
He might have a lot. I don't know.
He might have all of Hollywood on speed dial. I don't know. Is speed dial a thing in 1967?
No, they didn't have touchtone back in 1967, bro. Remember, some areas still had, like, operators.
True.
Oh, Leo and Milty exchanging some words right here.
This is why you mic up the managers.
Oh.
So, taking a rest, Dick Shawn, Don Adams, and Ed Fainter.
One of them's taking a nap right
Dick
here.
Sean is resting on Don Adams' leg.
Resting on Don Adams' leg.
I wish I was making this up. I'm not.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So, Roberto Clemente is at the plate right now.
And whips it.
The All-Stars leading the celebrities 2-0.
The legend, Roberto Clemente.
Oh, yes.
He was a good human.
Oh, no one's denying that. 0-2. Oh.
Ooh. Striked out swinging. Where's my K? I feel like I should be holding a K.
A K sign right here?
Yeah.
Celebrities, nothing. Clemente hasn't got it anymore.
What is Leo arguing about right here with his team?
I have no idea.
He's arguing with Bobby Darin about something.
Why?
Because
it makes for good television, that's why.
Giving the boys the benefit of his years.
Oh, Don Adams. Hey, guys.
That's Will Smart.
Hey, guys, I got a question.
Yep.
If he hit a long fly ball and it was foul, you think Vin Scully would say he missed it by that much?
I want him to say it so badly.
Mike's holding his head like... He knew this joke was coming. Like,
with all due respect, I think we all knew that joke was coming.
2-0 All Stars. Adams, the second baseman.
Look at that suit on Don. Don replaced Mike Mazurka.
You see Don Drysdale like, he threw the ball underhanded to first base to Willie McCovey for the out.
First base umpire yep. Emmett Ashford.
But Don Drysdale's like. Wait, like, he doesn't give an F about these celebrities. He's like, I'm just going to quickly throw the ball. Like, yeah, try me. I'm Don Drysdale, bitch.
Getting on Drysdale.
I think he's angry because Don is wearing wedgies.
That sounds like a personal problem.
Oh, right to the first baseman.
Yeah, right to McCovey there for the second out.
Make it, it's like, this is easy. This like, baseball isn't hard. All these professionals just make it look hard.
He was playing left field at the time.
Right. He's the one with the chlorophyll pants.
Oh, Peter Falk at the plate.
Peter Falk.
Oh, he made it. Infield single.
And another thing. And one more thing. Too deep, Gunslinger.
Anything to show off that arm.
Here is Hugh O'Brien.
Hugh O'Brien at the plate.
Legend of Gold Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, Peter Falk forgot. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to run to second.
And he did.
Delayed reaction there.
Peter Falk.
Falk got there first, though.
Who's coaching first base for the celebrity team? Tom Poston?
What? Am I supposed to look now?
Wills might try the hidden ball trick. Passarella arguing.
We're not doing this again, are we?
Okay, Colombo's on second right here with two out.
Right.
Nothing All-Stars, bottom of the second inning.
He smacks the teeth, the top, or the stupid out of that. So
after two innings, the score. Okay, so after two innings, it's 2-0 for the MLB All-Stars. So now we're going to go into the top of the third inning right here. Dodger Stadium. Okay, Frank Howard of the Washington Senators now being substituted in left for the MLB All-Stars.
Big Frank Howard, yes.
Oh, yeah. Line straight to Brooks Robinson. Showing him why he won like 15 or some crazy amount of gold gloves back in the day.
Right.
Oh, Pete Rose now at first base. Oh, Pete Rose
is at second. This was before he discovered the color of money.
And we're not talking about the movie with Paul Newman and Tom Cruise.
You can bet on that, Greg.
Don't you think, Vince? Oh, Mike, since you said you can bet on that. Right back at you.
Oh, strike. Got the spell on that one. That was a little too close
for comfort to Woody Allen. Oh, no. This Steve Allen's kicking the dirt at Don Drysdale.
Why?
Oh, I think he just
and now he's kicking Milton Berle's butt.
Steve Allen kick your ass.
Steve Allen literally kicked Milton Berle's ass on television.
I'm gonna kick your ass, I tell you what.
Here we go.
Oh
man, that's a high one. Looks and it's caught by LaVever. And that's the second inning.
That's the end of I think it's the end of the third inning.
The end of the third, score is still 2-0.
Oh, we got Jimmy Pearsall at the plate.
He's literally practicing his slide.
Yeah, and he's cleaning off the plate because
he likes a clean house.
Well, Jimmy Pearsall, well known for being very eccentric on the ball field.
Is he about to go ninja here?
He's got. Oh, I was going to say he's got two bats. He tossed one to the side.
That would have been interesting to see.
You know what I love is that those Angels hats with the halo on top.
Oh God, that's classic.
Oh yeah,
oh, those old school Angels caps. Yeah,
he's switching to the other side now. Come on, K-Tai.
He's getting you with the ump.
K-Tai. Swing and a miss.
Hit that straight into left. Oh, he's going to try for he got a double.
And what he just hugs him. That's not funny.
I think that might be interference. I don't think you can pick up the person off the base.
The runner was picking up the set. Was picking up the fielder. That's different.
Yeah, that's not interference. That's nice.
Oh, he just lost his bat.
Oh, boy.
That's not good.
No, it's not.
Willie Mays on deck. Pearsall talking to Tommy Gorman.
Oh! Took one full on!
But Pearsall's just going to walk to third base.
Backwards!
Backwards. Well, fun fact, he hit his 100th home run for the Mets backwards. Oh, what? What? Oh, no, he's caught in a rundown.
More like a hop down, am I right?
Oh, he tagged out. Oh.
Okay, I want to know how we score that one.
Let's do the
replay here.
Okay, ground ball. Let's go back here. 3-2. 5-2. 5-2. 5-2.
3-2-5-2-5-2-5-2. Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
And two with the tag out.
Two with the tag out.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Willie. Now, Willie Mays at the plate here.
And Willie Mays is...
Oh, Woody Allen made
Woody
the
Woody Allen with the grab.
Not... How often... Not a sentence you hear. Willie Mays flies out to Woody Allen. Never thought I'd ever say that.
Willie Mays flies out to Woody Allen. Woody Allen with the crab. Words that I thought I would never say on anything.
All right, Frank Howard at the plate. He had more than Woody Allen for breakfast. Ground ball.
And
Robert Loggia with the throw in short.
Robert Loggia with the tag out.
Are they switching umpires right here?
No, I think they're collecting their pay. I don't know. Emmett Ashford now takes over as plate umpire as we go to the bottom of the floor. Replacing Art Passarella.
All right, let's give a hand for the home plate umpire, everybody.
You cleaned that house, man. Cleveland
Sam McDowell on the mound. Oh, Sam McDowell from the Indians, Mike, on the mound.
Oh, fireballer back in the 60s.
Oh, no, he dropped. Oh, he got the out. Okay. All right, the rare 1-5-3 put out. And the crowd goes wild. Yay. Oh, the celebrities are not.
Do we have a bench clearer?
Oh. Willie McCovey just picked up
Willie McCovey just picked up somebody. Who is that, Don Adams?
I don't know. And he does a bow to Willie McCovey.
I guess he wanted to be carried back to the... No, that was Bill Danine, it looks like.
Yes, it was.
I guess he wanted to be carried back to the dugout. I don't know. I don't know about baseball.
Now Sam McDowell's playing Robert Loggia, who laces that down.
Man, Robert Loggia.
That's going to be a triple, it looks like.
That's gonna be a
he's going for the triple.
Robert Loggia juice. I think a little of the celebrity's game has
rubbed off. It's working out nicely.
Meanwhile, they got this usher who's like, hey guys, does anybody want like a Coke? Or a hot dog?
Hot dog! It's hot dog, yep. Good slide.
So the celebrities now 60 feet away from getting on the scoreboard. The All-Stars lead 3-0, and the batter is Max Baer. With one out and
one
Max Baer.
Max Baer, base hit. Robert Loggia jumps in
Robert
the air.
Robert Loggia with the score. Base with a
double. Oh, look at that leap.
So Max Baer doubles in.
Loggia.
Get it right, Vin. All right, now Dick Shawn with an opportunity representing the tying run here. with the MLB store. Oh, Pete Rose is going to throw that to McCovey.
Easy out. Yes. Max Bears still stranded on third. The batter will be Billy Starr.
The catcher, who drops in and out of the game whenever pitcher Ed Fainter makes an appearance.
I'll pick off. No, you're not going to do that to Jeff Ferrer right there. Oh, strike two.
0-2.
I don't know. Jimmy Pearsall is saying something to the ump right here. And that ends the inning.
Strike three. At the end
so four innings three down, and it's 3-1 MLB All-Stars. Oh, I think we got a commercial right here.
K-time. K-time. Swing and a miss.
Come with us on a trip in the smallest train in the world.
Oh.
We'll go all the way from here to there. Never leave your living room.
Whoever's taking these shots of these models, this is pretty cutting edge stuff. I feel like it's the real thing, guys.
I feel like we're watching the Super Train.
The only thing that's missing is the Bob Cobert music.
The only thing that's missing is a poker game happening in the background.
A poker game happening with freaking...
And the pool.
With freaking Roddy McDowell.
Which doesn't move.
Which doesn't
move. The water
move.
Does not move.
The poker
They're on a moving vehicle. The water does not move.
And in case you haven't heard, go listen to the redone version of the Super Train episode, yeah. Which released about a month or so ago.
Talking about the poker game with Roddy McDowell, Cleavon Little, and Rebecca Balding from Making It. Aurora.
It's about one half the size of any electric train you've ever seen. That's why we call it a postage stamp train.
Oh, I see.
That's about how big it is.
You
can put it on the bookshelf.
Well, remember, that was the thing back in the day. They actually released board games that were bookshelf games.
Oh, yeah. I got it. Last year, I got a Status Pro baseball board game shaped to fit in a bookshelf.
And actually, to tie it into this episode, one of the bookshelf games that was released back in the day was It Takes Two, based on the TV show that was hosted by Vin Scully.
Oh, so it all ties in.
Yep.
Okay,
in
so
that regard, yeah.
All right, so we're going to jump ahead to the bottom of the fifth right here. And Steve Allen's on the mound right here.
Ah, Steve Allen.
Oh, Roberto Clemente's pitching.
Oh, you love this. You love to see this.
All right. I don't know if Roberto Clemente ever, pitched. But, okay, we're going to see it right here. Oh, Steve Allen laces that down the line for a base hit.
I've got a secret on that.
Here is Bill Crosby. Takes a strike. And when Ashford calls him, it's a strike.
That is Ashford.
Ground ball.
Chopper back to the mound. Force. And gets a force play to
was that a 4-3?
A 1-6. It was pitcher to the shortstop, so.
Okay.
So Allen erased 1-6.
And since you brought it up, Greg, Roberto Clemente never pitched in a baseball game.
Oh, so this is a first.
Yeah, he never filled in when it was a blowout type of game. Nope.
Okay. So Bill Crosby just walked over to first. And by the way, future... Philadelphia Phillies manager Jim Fregosi's at shortstop.
Good eye, Bobby. Good eye. He's looking to dust.
He was playing for the California Angels at the time.
Right. Darren represents the tying run if he can get aboard.
There's a couple of former managers in this game. You have Jim Fregosi that you mentioned, and Jim LaFever, who played earlier. He was manager, I think, of the Mariners back in the 80s or so.
Oh, yeah, I remember when he was managing the Mariners.
3-1 All-Stars, bottom of the fifth.
Maury Wills actually managed the Mariners in the early 80s. Oh, rolling up the alley.
There was nobody on that play.
Oh, and inside the park, home
run.
And Jim Gorder's like, way to go, guy. Way to go.
And the celebrities for the first time today take the lead.
They love that.
Here's Bobby Morse.
Bobby Morse at the plate. So the celebrities now have a 4-3 lead right here.
Hollering encouragement.
At least they've got the field.
Oh.
And he has struck out without swinging.
Yeah, umpire, he got had the 40 right there with that K. Like, oh, Ryan O'Neill now at the plate.
Good for him.
Yeah. Hey, hold up. You know what Ryan O'Neill probably said when he first came to the plate? Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, boy. Oh, man. Oh, God.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God.
All right. Celebrities four, All-Stars three.
And now let's go down to the dugout where we will have a little discussion from Jose Jimenez.
Oh, no.
Go away, will you? Go and sit down. I want to watch
the game. Please, the foot lane floor. You've got to let me into the game.
Will you go get a drink of water or anything? Talk to the player.
Oh, no. Jose Jimenez really wants to play in the game, but Leo DeRocher's like, no.
Get into the game.
What position do you play?
Well, if they fourth base, second base, third base, and charter score.
What position do you feel more secure in?
I'm kind of curled up like this with my blanket in my hand.
Oh, get out
of here. Leo's like, I don't want to hear
this. This is why you mic up better.
The celebrities leading the All-Stars 4-3 and Steve Allen.
Steve Allen on the mound trying to close this out here for the celebrity All-Stars.
Don Adams has gone behind the plate.
And Don Adams behind the plate here. And that's a base hit.
Yep.
He's going to stretch. Yeah, he stretches that to a double.
Smart play.
Well, McCovey represents the tying run for the pros and the batter, Cincinnati's Pete Rose.
All right, Pete Rose here. Big at bat here with the tying run at second. Oh, he pops. Oh, it's going to be easy. All right, Bobby Darin with those sweet shades, one out.
The glasses up. The batter is switch hitter Jimmy Lefebvre.
Oh, wild pitch.
And moving to third goes McCovey.
And Willie McCovey will go to third. Whenever I say Willie, I gotta like think to myself, is it McCovey or Mays? Oh, base hit. Get running. All right, so we got a tie game here in the sixth inning.
Here on the top of the sixth. McCovey gets a hero's welcome.
Hold those crowds back, folks.
A rare applause for a San Francisco Giant at Dodger
in
Stadium.
Los Angeles. Yeah. What's up?
Oh, hold on. Johnny Roseboro's back up. Hey, call back to the Mr. Ed episode, Chico.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see all my favorite Dodgers. Johnny Roseboro, Moose Gowan, and the all-strikeout king, Andy Koufax. Oh, no, he misplayed the ball.
That's a euphemism for saying it was misjudged.
What's religion got to do with it?
Lefebvre scores, and the MLB All-Stars take the lead.
The Rose now take the lead. 5-4. The bullpen warming up. The batter is Sammy McDowell.
Oh, Sam McDowell at the plate.
Were there little kids just walking in the bullpen there?
It was the 1960s.
It was the 60s, dude. Little kids were walking everywhere.
Hey, Chica, we talked about in the Mr. Ed episode, like, Dodger Stadium security had no problem letting Mr. Ed into the ballpark.
No chill whatsoever. Oh, sorry. Buddy.
You figure he'd be tired after all those Peyton plays. There's Jim Fregosi.
All right, Fregosi at the plate here. Two out here. Oh! Oh my goodness! Did you see Jim? Look at Jim Fregosi. He almost fell on his ass, and he got an RBI single.
Okay. How many times have we seen that happen, Greg?
Oh, never.
The batter is Jimmy Pearsall.
All right, Jimmy. Okay. Oh my God, Jimmy Pearsall has a catcher's mask on.
And who did they put in now?
They put in the ringer to pitch. They probably should have done that like three batters ago, but whatever.
Probably, yeah. Pearsall never knows where the camera is.
Wait a minute. What's Jimmy Pearsall gonna? Wait. He play. He's playing around with the ump.
What in the world is he doing?
I don't know.
Jimmy's a cutout boy.
What are you doing, Jimmy?
Here's the crowd doubled up now.
This is working about as well as Jimmy's attempts to calm the crowd at Disco Demolition Night.
Two strikes on Jim.
Which is to say, not Barry.
Oh, strikeout.
K-time!
Wait a minute, did he give the umpire the bat? Wait, yes. Is the umpire going to... the umpire's going to bat!
Welcome to shenanigans, folks. We have reached antics, folks.
Okay, who is he playing for? Is he a celebrity or a major leaguer?
I guess he's taking Jimmy's place at bat.
Is he maybe his own team? Okay.
I don't know.
But look at this.
Is easy? You think this is easy?
Oh! Jimmy!
It's the time!
Nobody's
swing perfect. Look at this!
Nobody's perfect! All right, so we're at the bottom. So this is the last inning. We're at the bottom of the sixth inning right here.
Please, stay on your own side.
Uncle Miltie's. Are they going to go with Roberto here for the bottom of the sixth?
Is that Burl out there, Vince?
Is Clemente going to be the closer here?
Well, Clemente's in line for the win. He's already in line for the win as the winning pitcher. All right, so he's going to stay here, pitching to Don Adams right here.
Okay, wait for it.
Clemente pitching to Don Adams.
Wait for it.
Okay. Oh. When it
missed
comes
it by that much.
One out.
All right, one out here. First pitcher, Ed Fainter. Oh, no.
Oh, that was... Oh. No, that was on a butt. He hit his leg.
I think he foul tipped it, hit the leg, but it was fair. I don't know. Well, what matters is it's two out, and Jim Garner's the last hope for the celebrities right here.
Oh, Jim Garner's a rookie. Or a ringer, sorry.
Oh, ground.
Oh, really?
Oh, we got to reel that in error. It was a clear ground ball.
Yep. All right.
So with two out, that error at shortstop gives the celebrities a chance.
Oh.
Oh, look at that. Look at it go. It is high.
Yeah. Jim Gorner's going to score, and it's 6-5.
So Max Baer at second base. As he doubles in Garner, it is now All-Stars 6 and Celebrities 5.
Winning run at the plate.
Yes.
And the batter, Dale Robertson.
Dale Robertson at the plate here as the winning. Oh!
Oh!
Oh! Roberto with the liner to end it. Wow!
Letter and the bear catch grab.
Oh, bare handed.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Vince.
And we'll be back with interviews after this message from Aurora.
Oh.
Now we get to see, we saw the cars. We saw trains.
Oh,
now we're seeing
the bowling.
Bowling.
Oh, I
kinda
love this.
Kind of looks like bowling meets tetherball. Kids don't get hurt playing this.
Don't say you've never played this.
Of course we played it.
Okay.
They got the train set. They're pimping.
So,
all...
I'm still waiting for the presidential duplicate that is so like the real thing that not even his wife can tell.
Yeah, not even Loretta Swit can tell. And now we got the core racers. Vroom, vroom, vroom.
Now, within the space of a bridge table, you can have all the excitement
Skittle
of
a ball.
Remember bridge tables?
Skittle ball. All the thrills and
yes, I remember bridge tables.
Circuit. HO scale model motoring. All the fascination and wonder of a railroad empire.
And now they're going to put it in the book.
All by Aurora. The largest manufacturer of hobby products.
The whistles go, woo!
Woo!
I always wanted to say that.
Eddie, you've done something you don't usually hear about. In one inning, you struck out Mays, Killebrew, and McCovey. And as Pearl Bailey once said, that ain't no bad crowd to hang around with.
No, I can't get over this. These fellas are terrific athletes, you know, and to come out here and put themselves in this position must be... It's a great thrill for me, I tell you.
Eddie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Ben.
Congratulations.
Look at that vintage NBC mic that Bob Ben has.
Had a busy day today. Bob, you played a couple of positions, and you played ball before.
Oh, I love to play ball. And I want to thank my mother and my father, and I thought it was a great fight.
And they were delighted to have you here.
They certainly were. Yes. No, I was. I was delighted to be here.
And thank we you. Were happy. Thank you, Bobby. Don Adams sitting quietly, pensively. Don, you were busy winding up behind the plate. Were you seriously going to catch him for a while?
No.
Well, it looked like you took a long time to leave.
Now, I had my share of thrills. I had my 3 home runs. Would you believe 2 home runs and a double?
Did you have 2 home runs? I don't believe.
How about a long
what you believe?
That I believe.
That was about it for me.
How did it feel, I think?
I loved it. I love to play, and I haven't played in a long time, and I'm exhausted, and I think I'm going to faint now, Vince.
Well, we'll let you find a comfortable corner. Don Adams.
Yes.
Steve Allen was
not many people. Not many people know Don Adams affects his Brooklyn accent. It gets hard.
Before the game.
Yes, it was very crowded out there, but we've been rehearsing that parking quite a bit, and I think we did pretty well in that department.
Well, I think you didn't do badly. You didn't get hurt.
That's true. Actually, I got a base hit. I slipped the catcher a fiver, and that helped.
How did you feel pitching out there? Had you pitched before in softball?
Yes, I'm actually a hardball pitcher, and I only found out yesterday that it's a softball game, so I had about 20 minutes to warm up, and when I got out on the mound, I discovered I didn't have a thing left.
Oh.
Well, you were just too fine.
No, I was just too bad.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Will we see you next year?
Not if I can help it, Vince. Not in these circumstances. Actually, though, it was a lot of fun.
Steve Allen, honest as always.
And enjoyed and congratulated you with your base hit.
Well... These are the glorious moments that make a career in show business worthwhile. Vince, I'll see you later.
Thank you, Steve. He's accustomed to coming up in the limelight, but he is unaccustomed to striking out in the limelight.
Oh.
I think you were a little surprised.
Yes, I was always overbowed at when I think he's a great pitcher.
That must be something for you, even for you.
Well, I think it was more of a surprise to me to see a guy throw a ball between his leg like that.
Did you see
we're going to see a replay of when he threw the ball between his leg.
I saw the replay.
Oh, there it is.
bet against him.
Well, I would Magic. Well, that was pure Magic.
When you're
went out there to talk to him as you came up, did you have any idea what your former manager would say about you?
Well, I didn't think he would do that to me in that situation, especially in the first inning. But knowing Leo, he'll do anything to win. You know, it doesn't make any difference who's out there hitting it. It could be his mother. He would try to win. I'm sure that that's the way Leo plays.
One great thing about it, when you did strike out, and then throughout the game as long as you played, it was most evident to everybody that Willie Mays was having a good time.
Well, I came out and have fun, Benny, because I'm not in shape right now, but I think the people enjoy just seeing us out there playing. I think the stars were just great going through the pitch that they have to go through, so it was just a great day for me.
Well, we were certainly pleased to have you with us. Thanks, Willie.
Thank you very much, man.
Willie Mays. The shortstop of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Maury Wills.
Oh, Maury Wills.
Did you enjoy out there scamping around with all the Hollywood celebs?
I certainly did, Vince. Incidentally, I'm a third baseman now.
Well, you know, you hit the ball today, whether it be shortstop, third base, you hit it like you'd played a lot of softball with that short stroke. You punched a couple of base hits to left field.
Well, actually, I played softball until I was about 16.
You mean you had not played baseball?
No, I didn't play baseball like the kids do now coming up through the Little League. Besides, also, I think...
Oh, that's right. Maury Wills would be like pre-Little League era.
The bigger fellows, Mays and McCovey, during the softball game. Only softball, though.
I was just thinking that also...
Because in 1967, at this point, Little League would be like a new thing. Because I think it didn't start until like 39.
He struck me out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, they have to...
Delighted to have you. And hope you had as much fun
junior baseball league segregated as well.
Our next guest is a fellow who I will remember forever.
Oh, Jim Gorner.
That set baseball, well, maybe not back, but it established a record. Jim Gorner, you're the only man I know of who has been knocked out of a game twice.
Yeah, well, I was just lucky.
It was good for the body today.
Oh, yeah.
He was lucky.
Feel real good, you know. Of course, you know, when I faint on the mound, I took one look at Willie Mays. Maury Wills got a single, Robinson got a single, Clemente got a single, and then I got to face Willie Mays. You know, that's enough to kill him.
And then kill a brew, and it was time to get out
there. I almost got Harmon. I almost got him. It was the next inning.
Jim, we won't keep you from that hot shower.
I need it bad.
All of us do. Thank you, Jim Gardner.
Thank you.
So that more or less wraps it up from the locker room here today, where we saw, well, softball's answer to an experiment in terror. We saw the outcome of Major League All-Stars playing against a professional softball pitcher, and we saw the Hollywood celebrities in the limelight, to which they are accustomed, but unaccustomed to being at the other end of a hard-hit ball. It was a lot of fun. We certainly hope you enjoyed it.
And now we get some highlights and a closing montage and credits. And that's your MLB versus Celebrities All-Star Softball Game, a Yorkshire production. Oh, well, this episode had everything we could hope for, guys.
Yep. Had Vin Scully, had Jerry Lewis, it had Woody Allen with a base hit, had Steve Allen not getting hurt, Bobby Morse knocking it to Space 1999, and Jim Gardner, and also Roberto Clemente.
And Jimmy Pearsall umping.
And Maury Wills in an ascot.
Yeah, that was a pretty sweet ascot Maury Wills had on. That's
very fashion forward there, Maury Wills.
All right. But what did they all have in common in 1967 at Dodger Stadium? Well, for 1 hour, it gave us a glorious thing on TV. Well, guys, you can go to our website, as always, itwasathingontv.com, where you can listen to all 203 episodes prior to this show. You can listen to all of our special episodes, our live shows, director's cuts, and, of course, the remastered series going on. We just recently put up the next to last episode of the remastered series. We put up Super Jeopardy and Monopoly.
Four podiums!
Four podiums, guys. And, of course, complicated rule sets.
Yes. And, of course, we are on all the socials at It Was A Thing On TV. You find us on YouTube. Don't forget to hit that bell so you can stay on top of all of our updates. Help the channel out, and of course, beat the pesky YouTube algorithm. But we're not done, though, are we, this week? We're not done this week, are we?
Well, we got a special mini-sode coming up later this week.
Oh, yes, we do, about a show that was short enough to be its own mini-sode, if you think about it.
This mini-sode will probably last just as long as this show.
Yep.
But you'll find out more about that later on this week on It Was a Thing on TV. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you with more stuff real soon. Well!
Try some new Minute Maid orange tangerine. It's got calcium.
Then I'm not drinking it.
Oh, no, it's sweet. You'll like it.
I don't believe you.
Well, then who would you believe?
I don't know, Robert Loggia. Whoa, Robert Loggia!
Billy, your mother's right. New Minute Maid orange tangerine tastes great. It's got as much calcium as milk.
If you say so, Mr. Loggia.
Yeah.
This is great.
Enjoy your breakfast.
New Minute Maid orange tangerine with calcium.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Smith. You might know me for my shows on the Placement Nation Wrestling Network, as well as the North-South Connection podcast feed. You maybe didn't know that I have my own podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. Right now I'm looking for new talent to add to the roster. Have you always wanted to start a podcast? Do you have a current podcast? Maybe you're looking for a home? Pitch me your ideas. Shoot me a message on the Facebook page, The Jenny Position. You can find me on Twitter as well, at Jenny Position. Shoot me a DM. I'm looking for people who are committed, on time, fun, entertaining, with a unique voice and a real passion for podcasting. So let me know if you want to join the podcast world in the Jenny Position, joining such great shows as You Heard About Pluto, Hot Tokes, Bianca's First Time, Talkin' Pop, and many awesome shows you can find on the Jenny Position.
Minisode 13, submission number 008, Turn On. Turn On was a sketch comedy series that aired on Wednesday, February 5th, 1969 on ABC for one episode.
What?
That's right. It was scheduled for two. They only aired one.
How is this so bad they only aired one episode?
Well, stay tuned, and you just might learn something. In the mid to late 60s, one of television's biggest draws was NBC's Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Produced by Ed Friendly and George Schlatter, it showcased the comedic talents of its titular hosts, and of course, Dave Madden, Goldie Hawn, Patty Deutsch, Ruth Buzzy, Joanne Woolley, and Dick Whittington, and Henry Gibson.
Yes, can't forget about Henry Gibson.
It's like, I was thinking to myself, and Teresa Graves. I was like, I'm going through the entire cast in my head. So, Laugh-In, obviously, was ripe for duplication, being copied. But who would expect that George Schlatter and Ed Friendly would copy themselves, and I guess unencumbered by good taste and fame, take it up to 11. Well, that's what happened when they developed Turn On. So, what made this different from Laugh-In?
Well, there was a little bit of a draw here, and supposedly the show was produced by a computer.
What?
Question mark?
Yeah,
well, that's the major draw is this computer created the show and the skits within it.
And the entire set was just one gigantic negative white space. And the jokes were designed to be very, very punchy, very, very boom, boom, boom from one joke to the next. Even faster than Laugh-In, I thought.
I almost get the vibe that this sort of is a predecessor, in a way, if you think about it, to Robot Chicken, where you've got joke after joke after joke after joke, And they're just little quick tidbits. They're not really long jokes. Generally, that's how it comes across to me. You know, you have a little 5-second gag here, a 10-second gag, go on to the next one, go on to the next one, so on and so forth.
Yeah, basically.
Right. Yeah. But, oh boy, was the backlash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just say Bristol Myers, who funded the show and commissioned it for Slatter and Friendly, they never got their return on investment.
I have a story.
Okay.
This is from the February 12th, 1969 Cleveland Plain Dealer, and it's titled Turn on Fold Jolt's Creator. And it does mention Bristol Myers just within the first sentence. The Bristol Myers Corporation made history of a sort over the past weekend. Executives of the commercial giant informed the producers of television's latest enfant terrible, Turn On, that the program's material was unacceptable to them and all production on the series should be stopped. ABC, or more formally, the American Broadcasting Company, caught between the sponsor and the producers, didn't know what the devil to do and has spent the past few days marching in place. Bristol Myers was prompted to halt production of the show because of a large number of complaints from viewers across the country, plus outright cancellations of the program by affiliated stations, including WEWS-TV, ABC's Cleveland outlet. For George Slatter, the producer of Turn On, it's a strikeout and bitterly disappointing, for in his previous at-bat, he hit a Grand Slam home run as the producer of Laugh-In, currently rated the number one show on television. Slatter makes much of his attempts to create new concepts and programming methods in the visual medium, and to a certain extent, he has a point. He has labored mightily in television's field, and his Laugh-In caught the fancy of viewers in every corner of the country. In his latest effort, he has taken Laugh-In one step farther and created a sensory assault show unparalleled in television history. Having done so, he stepped back admiringly and thought, what hath Slatter wrought? He made only one mistake, but one of such proportions that it was enough to undo him. He forgot to mix into his whirring computer 5 essential letters, T-A-S-T-E. Filled with the heady wine of success, Slatter misjudged the distance between him and the fence called propriety. Instead of staying within its bounds and perhaps pushing against it, his leap carried him far over it into Never Never Land. For his transgression, society socked it to him, leaving him in a state of confusion. He doesn't know whether to wail over his misfortune or lash back at the ungrateful public. If I were George Slatter, I would huddle with myself and re-examine the reasons for spending the enormous amount of time, talent, and money on such a show. Is the show, as presently designed, really an advancement for television, or is it a tasteless 30-minute prattle of ancient satirical burlesque gags that do not play well? George Kaufman said, satire is what closes on Saturday night. George Slatter should ask himself why the late playwright said those words many years ago and act accordingly.
There you go.
And actually, I mentioned WEWS in that story. WEWS actually did not return to the airing after the first commercial break. So it canceled it literally after one commercial. And Tim Conway says it was after 15 minutes of the show. Oh, Tim Conway, by the way, was the guest host, if you will, of this episode.
And he would join, and he would actually join the regular cast of Teresa Graves, Hamilton Camp, Mel Stewart, and Chuck McCann.
Yeah. And he says it was canceled after 15 minutes, but WEWS says it happened after 10 minutes. And actually, related to that, I have another article about WEWS-TV turns off, turn on. And this comes from the February 6th Plain Dealer, so this is the day after. WEWS turns off, turn on. WEWS Channel 5 last night notified the ABC television network that it was canceling the new ABC show Turn On, which had its debut only minutes before the cancellation. Many persons phoned the station and newspapers to complain about the first program. ABC had designed it as an answer to NBC's successful Laugh-In. Don Paris, WEWS general manager, said he sent the following to Elton Rule, ABC president. If your naughty little boys have to write dirty words on walls, please don't use our walls. Turn on is turned off as far as WEWS is concerned. Them's fighting words.
Bringing the heat. And you know what? They weren't alone. Because upon hearing about the episode, three notable stations decided not to air the show at all. Those would be KTU Portland, KOMO Seattle, and KBTV Denver, now WUSA TV Denver, who stated, "We have decided without hesitation that it would be offensive to a major segment of the audience. Because nothing says offensive like a scanimated dancer whose actress moved so fast that the computer could not catch up." True story.
Interestingly enough, I have the TV listings for the following week, February 14th, and Channel 5, WEWS, does not have Turn On airing at 8:30 at night. However, interestingly enough, and obviously this was couldn't be changed, WAKR, which was the Akron affiliate of ABC at the time, they actually had Turn On slated at 8:30.
Hmm. So Channel 5 was not going to air, Channel 23 was.
Yeah, so again, you know, this admittedly is like a week later and they didn't have the technology that we have 50 plus years later, but they had Turn On slated for 8:30 that following week on Channel 23 in Akron. So maybe there were still plans to air it? Question mark? Or at least, yeah, air it nationwide. Obviously, Cleveland, WWS said, we don't want any part of this. I mean, I mentioned in the article just how the general manager of WEWS reacted to ABC's president. I mean, this isn't some PR person. This is going straight to the top.
Right.
I have seen a little bit of this on YouTube. There is actually a little footage from the first episode. And actually, believe it or not, there's actually about, I'd say about 45 seconds of the unaired second episode.
Where would that have aired, though?
Well, it didn't necessarily have to air. Maybe it's in the George Slater archive and somebody may have gotten access to it.
Maybe.
But yeah, just watching the show, it's very quick takes. I have the clip right now on my screen. I'm not sharing it with Greg and Chico. And the clip starts off, it looks like there's a poker game of some sort. You do see on the backdrop, on the walls, you see a spade and a club. So I guess they're trying to imply they're playing poker or bridge or something like that. And about 3 seconds in, a motorcycle rider appears on the screen with the blank white backdrop. The motorcyclist is an elderly lady, I'm guessing at least 60 or so, and she says something to the extent of, I'm ready to turn on, and rides off on the motorcycle.
Where's the joke?
That's a great question. And then actually after that, here's bad taste. It looks like we have about two rows of theater-style seating, and everybody in the seats, oh boy, they're all wearing Ku Klux Klan outfits. The white hoods with the red and white symbol on it. Yeah, and this, I mean, obviously that doesn't fly in 2021, but in 1969, when you had the riots in LA, the Watts riots, and the Huff riots here in Cleveland, racial riots, that's wrong in so many ways.
Shut that down. Shut it down.
Then moving on, because we need to move on quickly from that, they show somebody getting punched in the left eye. However, his right eye gets blackened. Okay. Again, this is just like really bizarre. I mean, it's not even laughing funny because, I mean, laughing, they did push the boundaries, but it was legitimately funny. This is just bizarre. And then they show a painter. Looks like he's painting a model who looks like she is topless from the backside. Looks like she's wearing some sort of bikini bottom or something. I don't get this.
Yeah, legendarily, not even the first episode was aired in its entirety. If you go to Lost Media Wiki, they have a statement that said that sometime before the end of the show, ABC cut the live feed, and Ed Friendly stated, now I'm quoting, "The remainder of this program will not be seen this evening. Or ever."
They knew they had a bomb instantly. I mean, if they actually cut the show and say, basically, mea culpa, for lack of a better phrase, they screwed up. Maybe it sounded good on paper, but, well, I mean, how many shows have we heard that sounded good on paper, but the execution was just abysmal?
Why does this podcast exist again, Mike?
It's me and Greg's whim, and we just brought you aboard for the ride.
True. But yeah, I mean, Turn On was a gigantic turn off.
Yeah, I mean, they tried pushing the envelope, but they pushed the envelope a little too far. A little too much sexual content, even though, admittedly, you know, back in 69... people were very liberated, much more than they were even earlier that decade. But apparently they weren't that liberal. And also, you know, we don't know who was making these phone calls. It could have been people from the older generation saying, hey, you know, this is stuff that 10, 15 years ago wouldn't fly on TV. And even though it may be acceptable nowadays on TV, gosh knows, you know, we've seen a lot of changes in the last 10, 15, 20 years, but who knows? I mean, it could have been, for lack of a better phrase, elderly people who are like, you know, this should not be airing at 8:30, let alone at all.
Yep. Nowadays, you have surrealist humor like this, and it's in its given time and place, which would be late night on basic cable. We will get into a really good example of that later on this year, but would you say this show is a bit too ahead of its time, or just no?
Like I said, maybe it's just a little too liberal for what may be old school conservatives back in the 60s. I mean, I get the laughing vibe, but again, laughing wasn't that sexual. Yes, they did have, you know, girls in bikinis with phrases painted on them, and maybe they had a little bit of controversy because that was the middle of the Vietnam War era, and they may have made some comments which might have irritated some people. But also at the other side, you've got so many characters from Laugh-In that were, I mean, funny. If you're talking about like Artie Johnson, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, he is one of the mainstays of Laugh-In. It sounds like Schlatter and Friendly were trying to capitalize on Laugh-In by maybe pushing the boundaries a little excessively. And I know that ABC was the new kid on the block compared to NBC and CBS at that time. Maybe they were trying to, I don't know, show that they were more hip to the younger audience. I have no idea. But yeah, this, even just in the clips that exist, the maybe 30, 45 seconds online, I don't get it. I mean, I get laughing, but this is not laughing. This is something almost like absurdist laughing.
Yeah, but, you know, you do something absurdist. I'm just going off the top of my head. Look around you for the BBC. You do it correctly, people will respond to it. Did you know that show made Olivia Colman's career?
Well, now, Look Around You is a little different. Yes, it's absurdist, but it wasn't really in a sexual manner. It was in a sexual manner, period. I mean, it was mocking educational television. And they did it so brilliantly. And really, if we don't have Look Around You on the list, what's wrong with us? Seriously, that is one of the best...
Famous? I mean, I don't know.
It aired on Adult Swim for a spell.
Yeah, I mean, it ran for, I think, one or two cycles on Adult Swim.
Okay, it's not that well known, so...
Nah, I'd agree with you. It's not necessarily that well known. Look Around You. Yeah, I mean, that's absurdist. That's funny absurdist. I mean, that really truly is a funny TV show. This is just like, this is rapid fire. I think it's just rapid fire. I can't even say it's humorous. I mean, I'm looking at this. This is bizarre. It's not entertaining.
It's too quick to be entertaining.
Well, and that may be part of the problem. I mean, like I said, I understand the Robot Chicken style of, hey, we're going to give you a gag in 10 to 15 seconds. Then we're going to switch the station and we're going to give you another gag. And that's going to take 15, 20, 30 seconds. Then we're going to give you another gag. And then obviously in that regard, Robot Chicken uses tons of pop culture references from the 70s and 80s and 90s. This just wasn't funny. Wasn't entertaining. And I know I'm basing that on 30, 45 seconds worth of clips, but yeah, this is not good.
All right. Let's just say our final thoughts. This was terrible.
Yeah.
This is bizarre, yeah.
This happened, and we all let it happen.
Yeah, we let it happen, but also at the same time, the people spoke, and they got it canceled immediately.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't get a return like that nowadays.
No.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, that does it for this minisode, and we'll have some more stuff for you guys real soon. Well!
Perfect.
Now that's a proper closing to a fast-paced, rapid-fire skit show.